the globe and back in your ear hole. It's the State of Combat podcast with the Brian Campbell on CBS Sports. And it is the box edition, all box AO, all the time, back with a bang. And of course, produced, underwritten, sponsored, and brought to you by that performance enhancing audio. How dedicated is the Brian Campbell and your boy Rafe Boogs to giving you the kind of box audio you deserve? Wow. We're even getting Rafe from across the globe, Manila and beyond, to make this show happen. And it is a loaded show, folks. Looking back on a pretty busy weekend, including wins from maybe your pound-for-pound king, Terrence Crawford. Big bounce back from Danny Garcia. Big news from the big baby. And a preview of what could go down as the hipster boxing weekend Super Bowl, with one good below-the-radar fight after another. Heck, we even got an interview with one of those said fighters this weekend when Ruguru himself, Regis Progre, arguably the best fighter in the world at 140 pounds, stops by to call some people out, talk about box. Yes, fired up. Please, if you're as fired up listening to this show as I am delivering it to you, do us that solid and go ahead on over to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, MySpace, Tinder, wherever you are listening to this show, swipe right and give us that 5-star review. All right, that's good. Hey, let's get to Boogs right away. Let me bring this man in. There's only two things I want to talk about with him.
Let's talk math. Let's talk boxing.
And first, the only opinion you should listen to is your own or something like that. Don't listen to Dwyer's opinion. We'll get to that in a second. Richie's back with us as well. But let me bring him in straight from the Philippines. He's an icon in many countries. He is a New York Times best-selling author. He will lick you up. His name is Rafe Bartholomew.
Let me lick you up. Let me lick you up. Let me lick you up. Earthquake yesterday. Food poisoning. Let me lick you up.
Manila. Baby.
Hey.
Rafe, are you alive, bro? Can you update the people on what you have endured in the past 72 hours? Good God.
Brian, it has been ugly. Before, you remember we talked about all the foods that you were so curious about last week that I was describing for you, all the dangerous types of things I'd be putting in my mouthful.
You ate a goat heart covered in rat embryo. What'd you eat this time, Ray?
That was the plan. But before I could even get to my favorite typhus laden carinderias out here in Manila, somebody on the Philippine Airlines flight slipped me a Jimmy in my food. I mean, it was bad.
Oh, God. I mean, that's just...
Another hot beef injection.
Literally before I could taste any food here in the Philippines, before I set foot on Philippine soil, I had eaten something really, really bad on that airplane that just killed me for 2 days. I'm still dizzy. I can't really walk good right now. I'm speaking better. That's good. I did a lot of yakking, as they say informally, but that's good. I've been on solid foods for 24 hours. I'm coming back. In the middle of it all, there was a 6.1 degree earthquake about, I don't know, 20 miles, 67 kilometers outside of Manila. Castillejos, Zambales is the exact epicenter. It's been crazy, man. I love this country, and it's trying to kill me all of a sudden.
I love it. Love that you survived it, Rafe. Love your dedication to do this show regardless. We already knew that you could hear Jimmy. Now you can eat Jimmy. You know, you can feel Jimmy.
Someone has slipped me the Jimmy. And the more important than all of my woes, my ordeals, is that as soon as I touched ground, see, there's here, I still use an antiquated form of mobile communications. I basically use prepaid communications.
Is this like the wire? Are you using those burner phones? Is this what's happening?
I may have a series of unlocked phones. I actually have a Huawei, which isn't even legal in the United States, but I use it because, shoot, I paid for it. I might as well use it. I don't care. I don't care who in China is getting my information. I'm not going to meet them in all likelihood. But what I was getting at, so the local term for when you add credit to your phone here is load. And when, believe it or not, this is real. This is real. I revisit my Twitter. I put it up there. When your load is getting low, you get an automatic message from your provider. In my case, Globe Telecom. It says load watch. You have X amount of pesos remaining on your credit. So this is the world capital of load watch. I'm happy to be here. I'm happy to talk box. I'm happy to talk math. I'm happy to talk performance enhancing audio and our guy, Big Baby Miller.
Possibly shot his load and worked too hard at the.
So Riff, are you dabbling right now with load management? Is this what you're saying? Cause we've got audio. James Harden was asked about this same topic.
When you hear the phrase load management, what do you think? What are your thoughts on that phrase?
What is that?
Load management.
I'm a hooper. I'm a hooper. I love to hoop.
I don't believe him. I know he's managed a few loads in his life.
I don't agree with the part about me being horny all hours of the day. Few hours in the day, yeah.
Few hours in the day, James Harden has managed a few loads. Come on. Come on.
He might have shot his load. Well, he has. Shout out to James Foley, our boxing friend. One of the biggest Houston Rockets fans in the world, he will tell you that James Harden may have shot a few loads and puttered out in the playoffs in recent years. He hopes it won't happen again.
Wow. Wow. Take that. Yeah, right, Jeffrey. All right. I don't even know where to go here. I'm just glad you're alive, Rafe. I'm glad you're with us. If we do experience any audio difficulties, I apologize to the people in advance. Are you with me? Tell me, are you with me, Rafe?
That's you. We know the words. That's all I need to hear. It's a, are you with me? Are you, look at me. Are you with me?
Rafe, do you deserve more or less credit than Joe Tessitore on Saturday's ESPN pay-per-view broadcast having, a neurological blah, 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 which I guess he fainted before the show, went to the hospital, and then Willis reeded himself back into the damn garden in the midst of that pay-per-view card and said, Bosuna, you out of that chair, bro. I'm back. Trust me. I'm back.
I gotta give the tip of the hat to Joe Test on that one. I have not been hospitalized. I could have hospitalized myself, but, well, maybe I'm more man than Joe Test because I said, heck no, I ain't going to hospital. I'm just gonna sit here with a big jug of water, 6 liters right here. This is my second of the day and just gonna nurse myself back to health step by step, load by load.
Wow. All right, you know, from the tip to the cup, Rafe. I know you don't know what that means. Let me break it down for you.
I have a group of analysts who receive the tip. They review the tip. They analyze the tip information and determine what type of tip it is.
Yeah. All right. Hey, I got a tip for you, listeners out there, by the way. And I know the people that like this show know that there's more to CBS Sports than just the state of combat. Hey, Rafe, let me ask you this: do you miss when sports networks used to cover just the news and highlights without that yelling and fake debate? Do you?
I sure do, Brian. You know I do.
So do I, bro. And if you agree with Rafe and I, if you hear Jimmy, what you need to do is check out CBS Sports HQ. Yes, the free 24-hour sports network that is built for fans just like Rafe, BC, and you. Here's what you're going to find there, folks. Tons of highlights, analysis, instant game reactions, basically everything that matters about the game or the fight. But no diving into the politics, social issues, load watches, or off-the-field topics like on other sports networks. If you like listening to me on this SOC podcast, I know you'll love checking me out on CBS Sports HQ, breaking down fights, previewing them, reacting to the big news. Hey, this week, HQ is headed to Nashville for the NFL draft. For all 3 days, HQ will be in the Music City with extensive draft coverage and even a few surprises. We'll have our full NFL crew providing analysis, grades, fantasy implications for every pick over all 7 rounds live as they get announced Thursday night, Friday night, and all day Saturday. Who's going to be there? The likes of Pete Prisco, Danny Cannell, Brady Quinn, Jason Lockenfora, Ryan Wilson, Bryant McFadden, Jamie Eisenberg, and much, much more. Hey, all the NFL guys that you know, you love, check them out on CBS Sports HQ. It's always on. It's always free. And here's the key, folks. You don't need to pay a subscription fee. There's no $9.99. There's no expensive cable package. And who else is going to give you that kind of package? Just download the CBS Sports app on your phone, Fire TV, Roku, Apple TV, and start watching today. Thank you. Now.
Wow, Brian. Wow. That, I, you know, I have it on strong authority that the CBS Sports app is the number one app of the NoFap community. So it is that good.
Yeah, that's the thing.
It'll help you keep it in your pants.
I'll never jack. I won't back up. I'll be there until I can't breathe. Yes.
That's what men do.
Well, Rafe, in a minute, we're going to have to find out whether Amir Khan.
I know this sounds terrible. I think he should finish.
In a minute, we will get there. Before we do, Rafe, before we break down a loaded weekend that was, what do you got planned in the next few days in the Philippines besides surviving? What do you got? What do you got? Anything?
I'm still taking it easy, to tell you the truth, Brian. I'm not feeling 100% quite yet. So I'm just hanging out in my old neighborhood. Gonna start seeing some old friends starting tomorrow, starting to make plans, dragging myself out of the cave and not just recuperating the whole time. But I kind of have to readjust my plans. Nothing too crazy. No, you know, I always like to take a trip, God, to the middle of nowhere and just find, you know, ride a bus full of rice and chickens to some place and then just get off and find the nearest beach and chill out for a few days. I may not have the confidence to do that depending on my health this time, but I'm going to see all my old people, see my godchildren, see my friends, and give a lot of presents away, give some money away, because I'm a big white guy and people are going to see me and see dollar signs.
Give away any loads or no? You'll manage that problem.
No. It's Danny's night.
No, wow. All right, Rafe. What blessings, prayers up to you. I hope that you survive. Before we also get into this, Load Watch is out of control, Rafe, as we already know. Okay. It's taking over. It's a thing. It's infiltrated the NBA. It used to be, Rafe, where one or two times between shows we'd get DMs, a text message from somebody close enough to me, a tweet that, hey, bro, you got to check out, you know, did you see the contender? They dropped a load on there. Or did you watch NBA tonight? Like, whatever. Now it's to the point, Rafe, where I can't even keep up with it. There's so many loads. There's so many near loads, false loads. There's just like, it's out of control. I literally cannot keep up with it, Rafe. We've started something that we can't control. At first we were playing with the bag. You know, you got to tease the bag. Now it's like, Rafe, I don't know where to go from here. I feel like we're eventually going to be blamed. People sending me hockey sound.
He's standing in front of the net with about 8 inches of his shaft in his hand.
I what do I do with that, Rafe?
I don't, you gotta do what you gotta do with the shaft, man.
I mean, seriously.
Boxing life is foreign to most of us. Strapping it on and going toe-to-toe with a foe is something most of us will never experience.
But to that guy's point, Rafe, have you ever strapped it on and gone toe-to-toe?
I have not yet experienced. I haven't gotten in the ring. I am a fake. I'm a phony, man. I am one of these boxing commentators who's never strapped one on and gone toe to toe in that ring, in that squared circle.
Yes. All right. Before we start the show, we want to, morning bird call. Shout out the Irish crew. Shout out the Alex Godinez crew. Shout out to our friend in the business, by the way, Evan Rakowski of the Fistionados podcast, who debuted a new segment this past week in which he took some of the debates, the philosophical boxing marketing questions that you and I have put out into the ethos and really given some thoughtful, detailed, long responses. Revisit his collaboration over there at the Fistionados podcast, at Fistionados on Twitter. By the way, Evan, the only problem is it's hard to find your pod. Rafe, do you have this problem? If you subscribe to the Leave It in the Ring feed, you don't get Evan. I don't know how to get his pod. I listen
well,
to
you
it.
Do. He shows up on that feed. He shares it with Kurt Emhoff and the rest of and Gabe Montoya and the Leave It in the Ring podcast and the Fistionados is every other week. So you got to be patient. It's a slow burn.
All right.
But you know, it's there and it's pretty amazing the way that he takes two idiotic things that we talked about and almost forgot we ever said and then turns it into a real discussion. I was impressed.
The only thing he referenced us and put us over and I love it. But he said, you know, we know this already. We give a great mix of real analysis and potty humor.
I keep my head in the potty. My head has been in a potty in the last 24 hours.
I can
promise you all that.
That does justify it right there. And at first, you know, I wanted to be offended by that. Be like, no, we're more than that. We're more than stick jokes, but I don't. I often wonder if we really are right.
Not really.
Not really. All right. So thank you, Evan. Hey, revisit his collaboration, Strongman.
I have it in my favorites folder.
Big fan of that show. He could use a little more Dwyer on that show, but outside of that, that guy's a smart man. We should have him on this show, right?
I thought about bringing him, inviting him long ago, but then he became a regular on Mannix and all the other good boxing podcasts. And I was like, you know what? They kind of beat us to the punch. Although look, I'm sure our listeners would like it just as much, in, assuming they aren't listening to every boxing podcast in the world like I kind
of
do.
Wow. He broke your heart going on Mannix. Before that, it was almost a tug and war of kindness between you and Evan.
It was like a tug and war of kindness. Every time I was kind, she would be more kind. Then I'd be more kind. Then she would be more kind.
Yeah, a lot of kindness going back and forth.
What is right. Brian, do you not want to talk about boxing with me? You acting like this is a slow week. This is everything is happening right now.
Yeah, you're right. That would be. That's how men do it. It's time. It's time to get into the weekend recap, Rafe. And we start at the top of the pops, ESPN pay-per-view, Madison Square Garden, where it all happens, where it all matters. And in the end, although they were pretty damn strong pay-per-view undercard, outside of that, the main event, largely inconsequential, kind of a womp-womp in the end, when Terrence Bud Crawford stops Amir Khan after the sixth round, in the sixth round, after going low. Or did he? Did he hit the tip just for a second? Or did he hit the leg just to see how it feels? You be the judge. But in the end, Rafe, let's not lie. We thought the fight was going to essentially end this way. Crawford by TKO. So it's not that much of a surprise. What we saw through six rounds really isn't that much of a surprise. But the way in which it ended, which was very confusing, very odd, I think it fueled everybody who was like, what a joke, what a farce, $70 for that crap. If you paid for that, you're... When in reality, I'm going to give them credit. During a time when there is a lot of crap on pay-per-view, Top Rank loaded that thing up with fights and storylines I needed to see, from Verdejo to Teofimo to Shakur Stevenson, that even though I didn't pay for it, damn right I didn't pay for this, I felt like it still was a entertaining, worthy night of fights, despite that main event.
Yeah, look, that was one of the strong, that I would call it easily the strongest pay-per-view undercard we've seen and are going to see this year. And even though, of course, DAZN is not a pay-per-view, it looks a lot stronger than what we're going to get on the Canelo Jacobs undercard and likely what we're going to get on the undercards for AJ and God knows who and Triple G versus Stevie Rowley. I mean, it was a strong undercard. It had fighters you wanted to see, even like Shakur Stevenson and Christopher Diaz. That fight looked like it might have been more competitive on paper, but props to Stevenson for really looking great in that. And there, even though it ended up being pretty one-sided, these are all fighters we want to see as much as possible. And it stacked up one after the other. I can't really complain about that. And look, the sort of the great irony of the Amir Khan finish was, let's turn back the clock a few weeks. Bob Arum was pumping up the Crawford Khan pay-per-view saying, oh, we got Amir Khan. He's never in a bad fight. He always goes and fights with his heart on his shield and goes out. Doesn't matter. He's not like Mikey Garcia. He's not going to cheat the people of their pay-per-view money. And what happens? Amir Khan may have looked for a way out of what he had gotten himself into in Terrence Bud Crawford.
He fights like a tough, tough gang member.
He does have balls, and he may or may not have gotten hit in them balls, Rafe.
It's true. Brian, that just made me think, because of course that's Bob Arum discussing the great Jeff Horn. But what if Amir Khan's next career move is to hook up with Glenn Rushton to get his mind right, to get the Swami in there, just talk him up, get Amir feeling confident again, got him feeling like himself again, not thinking about all that went down with AJ. That's all. That's the past, man. Wow. Move on. It's time to take over.
Amazing how everyone's saying, you know, maybe he should finish. I think that's too harsh. And you're saying, no, you should get with Glenn Rushton, find out the rhythm pressure method, and then, yeah, finish in your own way.
You have a little bit of fun with the bag. You play with it.
All right, let's get real for a second here. Rafe, let's settle a debate a lot of people are having. Amir Khan, of course, got hit low, was given the 5 minutes. It was a left hook. It looked to be on the thigh, but it was close enough to that zone, the greater – and I'm not going to try to pretend I know how big Amir Khan's package is, although, to be honest, we've all seen
it. He might be one of those mythical guys who got to wrap it around. Well, actually, no, we've seen it. It Ray, doesn't really look like honest, the kind you need to wrap.
Revisit his collaboration. We've actually seen it, all right? You know what I'm saying? Given the full 5 minutes, and in the midst of those 5 minutes, there's confusion in the corner. The doctor's on the ring apron. Virgil is Hunter, the trainer, is asking him questions, and suddenly the fight is stopped. And I know people like our friend Nicole Duva were like, "Hey, boxing writers on Twitter." She's like, "How do you not know the rules?" I didn't know the rules in that instance. I didn't know that if you are given the 5 minutes and you say you can't continue, it doesn't go to the scorecards for a technical decision. It's a TKO loss. So you either continue or you don't, and that's why you get 5 full minutes. In the end, Virgil asked Khan if he wants to continue. Khan said no afterwards, saying he felt like his stomach had dropped and he couldn't feel his legs and he wasn't there, blah, blah, blah. But is, in the end, Rafe, in boxing's harshest terms, did he quit? A guy who we said at least coming in, he's going to go out in his shield, he's not going to quit. Did he quit, Rafe?
I think that Virgil Hunter gave him the out, which was kind of Virgil Hunter. He saw how the fight was going. He saw Amir Khan's body language when he came to the corner after that low blow, started taking his mouthpiece out, was shaking his head, calling the doctors up to talk to him. The referee is saying, "Do you want the 5 minutes?" And he's like, huh, what? He keeps turning his back, acting like the fight is over. The body language was there. And at that point, I mean, Virgil Hunter could have done a couple of things. He could have yelled to Amir Khan, "Hey, relax. You got 5 minutes. Walk around, walk it off, take the time, see how you feel, and then go on with the fight." But, you know, you saw also in the rounds leading up to that sixth round, Amir Khan was shaking out that right hand, complaining about it in the corner. And besides the beating that he was taking in the ring against Terrence Crawford, he was having these hand problems. That discouragement looked like it was getting to him, and this was the proverbial way out. Was it a as obvious a quit as saying no mas? No, but it was him finding a way out of the fight. So can you criticize him for that? I think you can. For me, look, I don't know. I'm soft on quitters. I don't know why. I just feel like, shoot, it looks like a pretty hard damn thing to do in there. And like, if you decide you want out, I'm not going to judge you that harshly. Now, I should probably be thinking more in terms of the fan and the paying fan, the person who paid to go watch this fight, the person who paid to watch it on TV, and how that kind of outcome does really cheat them. But at the same time, I still sympathize with the athlete who, look, he had that fight was not going to end well for him, despite what Dwyer thought. And it just seemed like I couldn't really blame him. I guess deep down, when it comes to it, maybe I feel like I might quit too if I were tested like that. Jack. So I leave a little room in my heart for the jackers.
Couple things to lay out here. Number one, he was fighting. Maybe, we'll get into that in a second, but maybe the best fighter in the world, okay? Number one, all right? This wasn't Julio Diaz or Sammy Vargas, who both kind of rocked Khan, knocked him down, but Khan showed balls, righted the ship. I mean, this guy was the best in the world, a killer with a real backbone. If there's one thing ESPN got right in all of the hyperbole they threw down your throat leading up to this fight, and they did a lot of promotion. I'm very interested to see what the pay-per-view numbers say, because they did do a lot of promotion. This was their inaugural pay-per-view in the Top Rank era. But one thing they nailed was that Bud's a bully underneath it all. I mean, he wants to hurt you in the ring. He doesn't have a ton of personality. His personality is, "I want to hurt you." So establish that as one thing. Number two, to kind of support Khan, he was coming off the best stretch of the fight for himself, the end of round five, when he turned the tables on Crawford, started to dart forward in sort of a crazy style in which he would throw like weird haymakers that he knew wouldn't land, but it would force Bud to get defensive. And then at the end of those 4 and 5 punch combinations, he was landing stiff shots. But he quit. Let's be really honest. And the reason why you know for sure he quit was afterwards, Virgil didn't get his back. In the post-fight interview, Virgil said, when they pressed him, Virgil said, yes, I asked him if he wanted to continue and he said no. So Virgil confirmed. Amir Khan quit. He didn't want to continue. And the reality was Virgil wanted to get him out of there. He knew how that fight was going to end. Even though Khan just had some success, he had been knocked down in round one. And the main hook here is that all the things we said coming in of how Amir Khan might be able to be competitive for 4, 5, 6 rounds in the same way when he was leading on the scorecards against Danny Garcia before the knockout, when he was leading on the scorecards against Canelo before the knockout. What we found out early, Rafe, and repeatedly over those first 2, 3, 4 rounds was that Khan was not on Crawford's level. This wasn't the Canelo and Danny Garcia fights. You could say, whether you want to mount it up to the fact that Khan at 32 is really started to turn that corner physically in terms of losing those type of speed advantages he once had, or whether you just want to chalk it up to Bud being a special, special, generational, all-time talent, which he could end up being if he can consistently start getting big-time competition to prove that to us. Certainly on the eye test, he's slaying it. But Rafe, Khan wasn't in this fight in the ways we thought he could be. And it seems like everybody knows that and realizes that and accepts that, except for Richard Dwyer, Rafe. What sound were you sending me here? What the hell is happening? I don't want to turn this show into like, let's play the hits and highlights from Richard Dwyer. And by the way, revisit his collaboration on YouTube. Dwyer Boxing, it's fantastic. It's great. We sometimes take jokes at it. We sometimes revel in his comic genius, in his delivery. But sometimes, Rafe, he's had a tough year, and we got to call him out. He was back in Khan's back foot game coming in, and even with this disastrous one-sided loss, he can't get off the Khan stool, Rafe.
But understand, fight wasn't a mismatch. Khan is very much in the fight.
What?
There's an open question, even now, on whether Crawford can handle Khan's speed. Khan blows the
spacing
in the first round, doesn't he?
No, he doesn't. The only thing he blew was the fight. He wasn't on Crawford's level, Rafe. I mean, before I play more Dwyer sound, like, do you agree with me that Khan's speed was, it didn't show up in this? Crawford was faster, like you predicted.
I thought that it didn't show up as a huge advantage. He didn't look slow in the fight. What surprised me is he looked sloppier than I had ever seen him before. And Paulie Malignaggi mentioned this on the BBC Five Live podcast, that some of the speed was there, but the coordination wasn't. And you that kind of like you were describing with those flurries where he was leaping in and all, kind of all over the place. In some ways, it did make Crawford look a little bit confused, because it was confusing, because it was like, what the heck is this right now? It wasn't particularly effective. And overall, Crawford was by far getting the better of those rounds, but it also wasn't giving Crawford the opportunity to really put on a showcase and really just like light up Khan like I thought he might have. And maybe he was going to if the fight had continued. But
let me interrupt you. Do you think the sloppiness was because of the first round knockdown? And by the way, Crawford, who always starts slow, found an opening, hit him with that right that turned Khan's chin and came back with a looping left that floored him. Do you think Khan's legs never recovered?
That's possible. I mean, you have to factor that in and think that's part of it, because we've seen what happens when Khan gets hit and goes down before. His legs can be jelly for a very long time, and it seemed if that wasn't the case in this fight, then he's just got bigger problems in general, because the legs were there in some regards, but again, they just weren't productive. He was all over the place. He was just kind of flying around and you know, getting hit and not accomplishing much in the ring. So I guess he succeeded in dirtying up, or not dirtying up, but uglying up the fight in a way that kept him, I wouldn't say in it like Dwyer believes, but kept him from really getting lit up like he might have otherwise. But it wasn't a great looking performance by any means, as far as I was concerned.
All right, let's go back to Dwyer here. He's got interesting takes on this one.
Right. If a guy's gonna talk smack about the other guy quitting, do it legally. You don't hit a guy low or hit a guy with a rabbit punch and then say, hey, he was looking for a way out. You gave him the way out.
I feel like we need to, like, get on the couch here and psychologically break this down. What was Dwyer's ultimate bet coming in? Because it seems like he's hedging.
He actually
with weird
he did
analysis.
Fine. He got his hedge. He did the underdog for the win, +650 for Amir Khan, and then hedge with Crawford by stoppage. So he survived. It's just he saw something different in the fight than the rest of the world.
All right, it's very Dwyer-like.
You know, I'm guessing a lot of the men watching this video have gotten hit inadvertently in their private parts before.
Well, yeah.
Right? Understand boxing rules. All of us understand that the family jewels are so vulnerable that the rules allow you to have 5 minutes in a sport where a round is 3 minutes. They allow you to have a round plus 2 minutes, because everyone understands that when you get hit there sometimes, life ain't the same.
Well, he did nail that, Rafe. He did absolutely nail that. I just found it weird how much he's defending Khan in this. Look, Khan got outclassed. Whether it was the first round knockdown that took him off his game or not, I know he showed heart in those early rounds by getting up and coming back. The second round was really Crawford, surprisingly for me, kind of almost shooting his load going for the knockout. Got a little bit reckless, was just trying for one shot. At the end of the second round, Crawford, though, made that adjustment and realized, okay, look, I'm not going to knock him out with one shot. I got to go back to breaking him down. Rounds 3 and 4, he just broke him down, Rafe. It wasn't really that competitive to me. And look, again, it's not that we didn't see this coming in, but I was, I guess, surprised at how easily Crawford adjusted, Rafe. I thought he was going to punt a few rounds. He didn't need to. This was one-sided as expected.
Yeah, let's talk about that first round, that knockdown, the angle that he was able to land that right at. I mean, it almost came straight down. It was that's when you see really special stuff out of Terrence Crawford, because that wasn't a normal punch, that wasn't a normal opening. It was, I mean, he found something there that changed the fight. Really, just you could say ended the fight, or made it clear that what was going to happen for the rest of this fight right there. And it was something like you can't teach, you can't predict. It was just there. There was a split. There was a moment, a window, and he figured it out. That's why this guy is special.
Yeah. He certainly is, Rafe. And all right, Dwyer, you got anything else?
And understand, Khan has power, right? Khan's dropped many people.
Many guys.
Many
times Rafe's dropped him in the ninth round.
That fight went nine rounds.
All right, enough Dwyer here. So Rafe, despite what Dwyer's saying, I didn't really see Khan's power. I didn't see anything.
No. He did manage to land a few flush shots in a handful of rounds, which you would expect to happen in a boxing, fight. But so what? Crawford never looked hurt, never looked rattled, never looked concerned about whatever Khan had landed. He was always in control, always landing the cleaner, harder shots. He was doing better work. I would not expect Terrence Crawford to get through a fight completely untouched. Jeff Horn touched him a few times. Jeff, who's Jeff Horn? Nobody.
Nobody. I got so many different disrespectful things that I can say right now. I don't even want to do it because that was back then. Doesn't even matter now.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. Let me take you behind the curtain real quick. I had a chance Thursday of fight week to go to New York City and interview during the satellite media tour in person all the top names on this card. And I sat down with Khan, and he's fantastic, by the way. You got to give that up to him. He was on this show a month ago. He's fantastic. He's a great interview. During the interviews, in between, Virgil Hunter standing in this tiny hotel room that's sweaty, and he's standing by the doorway, and he's getting agitated. And after my interview with Khan, with me in full vocal range of hearing this, Virgil starts complaining. Every effing interview is the same. Every single interview is the same. Why are we wasting our time here? We need to be training. Amir, every interview is the same. They ask the same questions every single time. And Amir's like, they're different entities. They're different, you know, different. No. It's the same interview every time. I don't get it. This is so stupid. And then, Khan goes, how much more do I have? And the guy running is like, you got three or four more. Hold on, we'll hook up. Virgil steps in and goes, no, it's over. I'm sorry, fellas. I'm sorry. It's over. This is too much. This is ridiculous. And he pulls Amir off the stool and they leave, Rafe.
Virgil has made it clear that when he wants to get something done, he can pull that ponytail and end it quick.
He spoke it,
received it. It's lights out. He knows a few things.
Wow, that was pretty interesting. All right, so should Khan finish, Rafe? Let's be honest here, okay? This was, again, it's hard to just outright say, he's 32. He can make a lot of money against a lot of people. It's hard to outright say, oh, this proves he should quit, when he fought arguably the best in the world. What say you on, I know it's harsh, but should he finish, Rafe?
Should he finish? Like, do I think that, usually we save that for someone who is like endangering their future livelihood or really looks like they are washed badly. Khan is not that.
But would he,
Rafe, really care if I ever see him fight again?
But Rafe, I'm going to interrupt you. If Virgil did not pull him out, would he have taken the kind of KO loss that you would be on this show saying he should finish?
Maybe. No, I don't think so. Just because, like you said it, you're fighting Terrence Crawford. You know I kind of know what's going to happen if that fight is allowed to reach its natural conclusion. So I don't know if I'd be out here beating the Prince Nassim drum, especially because, and we got to give Teddy Atlas some credit here. This has been his line for months leading up to this fight about how Amir Khan's true talent in boxing is talking himself into these big fights. You look back for the last 5 years, who has Amir Khan fought? He will only fight comeback fights, kind of just like stay busy fights, things that are totally easy walkovers for him, where he still manages to get hurt usually and have a few scary moments. Or he goes and talks himself into huge fights. Terrence Crawford, Canelo. If he can continue doing that, it's hard to say no. If he can manage to pull this off one more time, talk himself into one more big payday, shoot, maybe catch Manny in a year or two coming off a loss or something. If Manny has to go up against a tough welterweight in the PBC and they still want a big name after that, there could be a name out there someday. If Khan wants to keep his hat in the, you know, his name in the ring, why not?
I feel like we'll eventually see him against Kell Brook, because there's, you know, 6-7 million to be made in England for that. And I feel like you're right. I feel like we eventually see him against Manny in some form. That's just like, I don't think he's going anywhere anytime soon. He probably just continues the pattern you just laid out. Fights comeback, fights against guys he shouldn't, yet looks vulnerable in them, but yet wins and seduces us into thinking he can compete in another big one. But I think
he doesn't seduce anyone into thinking that. Manages to make it something that you could half respectably sell to an audience.
I think he's done ever fighting for a title or, you know, chasing the best in the sport. Like, this was the end of that chapter, at least. It's full on Twilight mode now. Use his star power, use his name. You could argue it's already been that for a while, but like, I don't ever want to see him rematch in Danny Garcia.
Got Maidana coming back.
Oh, stop that. No, that's a bad idea. That's a bad idea. All right. So from the after effects regarding Bud Crawford, Bob Arum suddenly stumbles in the ring and he's 87. God bless his heart. We love him. And I will give him this one piece of defense. It didn't seem like he knew he was about to get interviewed by Bernardo Osuna, right? Osuna's interviewing Bud, asking him what's next. And to Bud's credit, he says, if the fans want Spence, I want Spence. Like, let's make this fight. I want this fight. Perfect answer by Bud. So then Bernardo turns around and goes, Bob. And Bob's response was like, what? Bob gave you one of those, like, for the first time. And you got to give him credit. He's 87 and he always nails it. This was a moment where for a second you're like, oh my God, does Bob know where he is? Does he know what's going on? Should there be a live mic in front of him? This is like when people are dumb enough to have like 93-year-old Bob Feller on to talk baseball and he accidentally drops the N-word and you're like, yeah, kind of saw that coming. Bob, the only problem here is he completely flipped the script. I don't know if you've been following Bob's quotes during the week, but he was actually kind of diplomatic. He was saying, look, when Terrence beats Khan, or if he does, first call I'm making is to Al Heyman. First call I'm making. And he was positive about it, Rafe. There was no Mr. Cancer. You gotta call Mr. Cancer.
You gotta talk to Mr. Cancer.
There was none of that, Rafe. But once that microphone post-fight, dude, it was like full-on heel turn. Let's go back. Boxing Cold War 2012 all over again. Not only did he say this fight basically can't be made because of Al Heyman, he urged fans to boycott Al Heyman's fights until Heyman makes it happen. Rafe, there's a lot of issues with this. Number one, it's like the worst type of response if you actually want to make the fight happen. Number two, Bob has zero leverage. PBC has all the welterweights right now. Bob has no leverage. What the hell are you doing? Rafe, it screams to me that Bob really doesn't want it to happen or doesn't want it to happen now. So it's just let me, you know, poke him back. What the hell happened there, Rafe? What happened?
How am I supposed to know? How is anyone supposed to understand how calculated Bob Arum is at this point in time in his life and career? He is a well-aged specimen, and he does still like to toke on the reefer, Brian. I don't know exactly what his mind state was going into that ring. And yeah, so in the comments, I mean, you read the Keith Idek boxing scene story about the day after presser that he wanders into the garden, starts like throwing out insane race cards left and right. It's not good.
Oh yeah. Well, he basically said that this fight won't happen because he's white as a promoter, right?
Well, yeah. He says that basically Al Heyman is going to tell Errol Spence, oh, don't listen to what the white guys on the other side are saying. Just stick with me. I'll take care of it. Let's keep it in the family. I don't know what purpose that serves. If he believes it or not, I don't know why he necessarily believes it. He's worked with Al Heyman before when they had to do Mayweather Pacquiao and for a lot of other smaller fights. This is not a bridge that's never been crossed. It's just, but more importantly, there's no way that can help this situation. And the 2 days before he's talking about, I'm calling out right away and saying, let's do it 50-50. We'll figure it all out. We'll do everything right down the middle. Well, shoot, that's a good idea. Why not? I think that's a pretty fair offer for these two fighters at this point in their careers. But to just flush it all down the toilet in those next two press conferences, I don't know, man.
Yeah, your normal reaction would be, even if you don't want to do this fight now for strategic reasons, you at least pull the Mayweather-Pacquiao card for 5 years and you lead people to believe that you do. You build up the fight by saying, look, the only fight that matters is Spencer Crawford. We want to make it happen. It's not easy to make it happen, but we're willing to talk. We're willing to do 50-50, which he did the next day. The next day he told reporters, I'm going to send an offer. We want it to be 50-50. And by the way, it should be 50-50. These are one of those times it should be. But his reaction leads you to believe one of two things. Either that there's a calculated reason why he doesn't want this fight and he's trying now to make some kind of weird move. Or two, let's have this conversation, Rafe, because sometimes you got to take the keys away from Grandpa. And Bob has been amazing. Like, Bob in his 80s has been a PR dream. He's lovable. He calls everyone out and rips them, but like in this fun way, Rafe. Remember the time he ripped Dan Rayfield for that Macau fight in that Kevin Ioli interview? Revisit that collaboration. That was gangster right there. Is there any chance, though? Like, because we don't know behind the scenes, is he making all the decisions? Is Todd running more of the show? Is Bob more of a Joe Paterno figurehead at this point? At some point,
God, that is a rough comparison, man.
Rafe, at some point, could Grandpa, like, make the wrong decision publicly? And behind the scenes, we're like, oh, crap, Bob, that was the wrong way to do it. What are you doing? Maybe we should get him away from the microphone. Am I being rude? Is that rude of me to offer that at some point? Naturally, this man's going to age and his mind is going to go a little south.
Yeah, next thing you're going to be telling me Bernie's too old to run for president. All these ageists out here. Look, 87 is pretty old. Who am I to say that he can't do it? He does such a good job that you want to give him the benefit of the doubt. And obviously he's explained how he's grown the business around him. It's not just him. It doesn't rely only on him. He relies on Todd DeBuff, his son-in-law, and all the other people he's put in at top rank to handle that day-to-day and do a lot of that work for him and allow him to just be that figurehead, that beloved media figure who can still come out and deliver. You know, the one great privilege about being so old and experienced and a legend is you get that pass to say really inappropriate things all the time, and you get away with it, and everyone is just like, all right, whatever.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
So, like, he's seen some things.
To be honest, podcasters like us, we use that to our advantage, right? If we get offered Bob Arum, we're like, oh my God, yes, because he may rip somebody. He may tell jokes. He may be talking about smoking a blunt. And you're like, oh my God, Bob's the best. But at some point, Rafe, just like how we love the violence in boxing, but at some point that violence goes too far and we're like.
So you think he should finish?
I don't think he should finish. I just wonder.
Like
one day we're going to have him on here, Rafe, and you're going to be laughing and he's going to be toeing that line and then he's going to go over that line and we're going to feel bad for giving him that forum, right? Just like when somebody dies in the ring, we're like, oh, that was too far, right?
Wow, that escalated quickly,
yeah, dude,
Brian.
Take that back. Editor, edit that out. I love you, Bob. You are the best. All right, here's my business question on Bob's reaction, right? Maybe Evan Rakowski, our friend on the Aficionados podcast, needs to handle this. Here's my conspiracy theory here, Rafe. Did you see what's happened with ESPN on the UFC side? They are all in financially, ESPN, to the point where they have paid extra to now take over and handle the pay-per-view business. What I mean by that is for MMA now, for UFC, traditional cable companies no longer handle pay-per-view for UFC cards except for at restaurants, bars, public settings. The only way you can buy a UFC pay-per-view is through ESPN Plus now, through the online streaming, okay? Boxing side, Top Rank, although this was their first pay-per-view, is not there yet. You could buy Con Crawford traditionally, or you could buy it like I did over the, ESPNplus.com/pay-per-view, whatever it was. Is the reason why Bob essentially threw a middle finger at the idea of Spence Crawford happening soon and seemed to put a wedge between it happening, right? Because if you're Al Heyman, if you're Sam Watson, if you're those guys waking up the next morning and you're going, Al, Bob really said that? Wow. F him, right? That's what that says. Is the future of ESPN's boxing pay-per-view also likely headed toward streaming only? Which would and the reason why that could be important, Rafe, is the wedge in boxing right now is the fact that DAZN is operating under a different bubble. They're saying we're killing pay-per-view. So in theory, Rafe, you can't have Joshua Wilder if DAZN's involved because DAZN and Fox or Showtime are in two separate businesses. So you can't do a joint DAZN and Fox pay-per-view because one's doing traditional pay-per-view, one's doing streaming. Is ESPN going to enter into that if they go the route that they've done of UFC handling all their pay-per-views on their own streaming network, not using traditional? Could we be in a future where the idea of an ESPN, Terrence Crawford, and a Fox Showtime Errol Spence coming together Mayweather-Pacquiao style cannot happen because one could potentially be going to streaming pay-per-views and not traditional? I know that was a lot of mess words and weirdness. Does that make any sense that Bob is sort of just like saying without saying, we're not doing this anytime soon because of the financial structural business realities?
I mean, I see what you're saying. I don't get this. Nothing about the way that ESPN has handled the boxing and the MMA sides makes me think that they are treating the two different sports as the same. And I don't think they should. They're different businesses. The UFC is a much sort of more contained, complete package, right? That's why that has been the advantage of MMA over boxing, at least as a product for all these years, is that boxing is still, and however, it goes both ways. It kind of comes and goes in waves. Sometimes that's really good for the UFC because it allows them to sell their entire product. They get better. They can bargain for better deals. It also allows the UFC to screw their fighters and pay them much worse than the top boxers in the world and hit them with this weird Reebok endorsement deal that keeps them from making other money on the side. So that's that bargaining power, that unit that the UFC sells itself as is one thing. Boxing is an amoeba. It's all over the place. It's constantly shit. It can fit into any peg you need it for. You want a pay-per-view product? You want a broadcast TV product? Cool. Put it on Fox. You want to stream this stuff? We got DAZN. Boxing will give you whatever you want at any time. They will figure out a way to sell it to you. It's like, it's like an insurgency, you know, it just morphs into whatever it needs to be at any given time. That's why Larry Merchant said boxing cannot die. You can't kill boxing. It's always, it's just going to be there figuring out ways to survive in all the dirty little cracks that exist in any system. That's boxing. Right, and I don't think that ESPN is trying to turn Top Rank into a UFC product.
All right. Well, you just hit it very macro, but let me hit you micro for a second. The reason why ESPN would pay the extra money to guarantee money to UFC for pay-per-views to take their pay-per-views off of the traditional, way of buying it is because when you put a pay-per-view on, you're automatically off the top paying somewhere between 40 and 50% to that distributor for putting on the pay-per-view, to that provider, to whatever it is, name whatever it used to be. What was it called? On demand, all these other different things. Okay. Right. If you do it streaming like ESPN's UFC pay-per-views are now, they're getting so much more money. It's the reason why, by the way, WWE took a gamble in 2014 and went full on streaming network to get all the money. So I'm just saying, if Top Rank and ESPN decide to go that route and ESPN says, look, we want all the money, can you go back to traditional pay-per-view to share in the revenues to make a Crawford Spence happen? Once you go.
No, if they commit to a different, yeah, if they decide to commit to a totally different model, I don't see that happening, but I'm not sure that's the way they're going to treat the boxing product. And you know, ESPN is still for a long time. I mean, look, Disney is clearly making a priority of growing its streaming business through now Disney Plus, ESPN Plus, which has been around for over a year now and has grown. They've done a great job of growing it from, you know, converting all the insider accounts to boxing, the UFC, all the things they've done. It's been pretty successful. But ESPN is, I think that they still need to make money off of cable. They still do make money off of cable, even with people cutting the cord, even with subscriptions going down. That's still a lot of bread they bring in. And I don't think they totally want to walk away from that when boxing provides certain opportunities to do big pay-per-views. I think maybe, and this is something that was interesting, Leonard Ellerbe had some quotes after the fact that were much more sort of level-headed and moved on from the beef with Bob Arum. And were like, then he just said, he leveled with him and said, look, right now, to be honest, most American sports fans don't know who Errol Spence or Terrence Crawford are on that outside of 300,000 or 400,000 hardcore boxing fans. And so, we may need to marinate this. Nobody likes fans. Real fans don't like marinating because we know who they are. But for these guys to make the kind of money they deserve fighting each other to get that gigantic payday, they got to become stars. And that may take that's going to take more time. Now, Bob Arum lighting his relationship, his already bad relationship with the PBC on fire over the weekend, seems like a made perhaps unnecessary way to postpone to encourage that marination process, but it may be part of what's going on here.
All right, we spent a lot of time in the business. Let's move on to the mythical pound for pound update, Rafe. ESPN ESPN seemed to not figure out week to week when it was time to promote Lomachenko the week before. He was their pound for pound king in terms of the broadcasters. And then when it was Bud Kahn time, it was Crawford who was back on top. Did Crawford's performance compared with Lomachenko's performance the week before against Krolla change who right now you are demeaning and not demeaning, you are calling the number one fighter in the world? Who is your pound for pound king right now?
Well, look, I think that Lomachenko's performance last week was more impressive than Crawford's against Amir Khan. Lomachenko looked amazing. And now Krolla is made to order, right? But still, god damn, Lomachenko looked good. I mean, by God, he looked good. But I'm a Crawford guy. The evidence, if you're a resume guy, if you're a person who really thinks that a fighter has to have proven it, has to have the right wins, have beaten a lot of former champions, all that stuff, then Lomachenko is your pick. You gotta go with Lomachenko. If you allow yourself to have that intuition, that eye test thing, then you can go in different directions. And for me, before the Lomachenko fight, I favored Crawford. And I still favor Crawford, even though I think Lomachenko's win over Krolla was more impressive than Crawford's over Khan. I just think Crawford is that guy. I think he's got something even different. Among a crop of really great fighters right now, which includes Vasily Lomachenko, Errol Spence, Canelo, whatever's left of Triple G, SSR, Inoue, all these guys. Crawford just has something, man, that I believe in.
Yeah, we asked Al Bundy his thoughts on who the Pound for Pound King should be.
The Russian, I think, is more to my liking.
I still have to agree with him. It's really close right now, but I'm still going to lean to the Russian-Ukrainian Vasily Lomachenko. Just barely. Just barely. And it's more on Bud still needs a little bit more on that resume. Yet, if you're going to be Bud, you're going to go with the eye test and the idea of if they were in the same weight class and they fought, would you favor Bud because he's got more power in the end? And he's not as creative as Loma, but he's certainly the most creative Walter Wade out there and the most sort of artistic, let me adjust on the fly, let me switch stances. I mean, they're calling him – did you hear Max Kellerman say he's the best switch hitter since Marvin Hagler and Mickey Mantle?
I was going to say, is he going to say like a baseball player here? There aren't too many I can't, yeah, other than say Marvin Hagler. Who else are the renowned switch hitters? Yeah. Oh, hey.
Yeah, all right. Hey, okay. Hey, let's roll on out of here. That debate is fine. And by the way, that's great marketing for ESPN to have both Lomachenko and Crawford and be able to constantly do this. Who's the best in the world? We got the two best fighters. You know, just like DAZN's putting out there, we got AJ and Canelo. We got the two most important fighters. It's interesting, the lay of the land at the moment. Before we break down the undercard quickly here and what else we saw this week, hey, let's pause for a minute to hear from a word from our friends and sponsors.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
It's the NFL offseason, but on Pick 6, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, the football season never stops. Hosts Will Brinson, John Breach, and Tyler Sullivan are joined by analysts like Brady Quinn, Leslie Deuceable, Katie Mox, and RJ White to keep you in the loop on everything happening around the league. Whether it's free agents signing with new teams, the all-important NFL draft, or schedule release day, Pick 6 has you covered. As the face of the league changes with every team move and player pickup this spring, Pick 6 is a must listen. Download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and anywhere podcasts are found.
All right, Rafe, and we're back. Let's quickly go through the undercard. Teofimo Lopez got the showcase opportunity against Finland's Edis Totley. And like I predicted, Rafe, it would be difficult, yet he would find his moment and get the spectacular KO, and he did, Rafe, and it was difficult because very early on, Totley, the light-hitting boxer, was there to survive once he felt Teo's power, but Teo still found that hole, drilled him with a body shot, fifth round KO. Rafe, we can't hold this guy back. He's ready, Rafael. He's ready.
For what?
The bigs, all the bigs, Rafe. Do you notice, though, by the way, for all that talk from Lopez and his father coming in about wanting to fight Loma, afterwards they didn't mention Loma once. Were you surprised by that?
A little bit. Well, they're doing some weird thing where they're no-selling him. Remember last week when Teofimo Lopez showed up at the fight at Staples Center and decided not to watch the entire Vasily Lomachenko-Krolla fight? He just sat there and looked at
and
his phone
the whole
time.
And they claim he never looked
up once.
And then
he had an interview. And he's like, I didn't watch a fight. I don't care. I have so many disrespectful things to say about that. I enjoyed the clip of Vasily Lomachenko. In fact, it's not exactly new. Lomachenko's always had a little bit of this in him, but like Lomachenko has turned the dismissive up to the max in his commentary now. And they played that little clip during the first round of the Teofimo fight where Lomachenko is like, who is this Teofimo? Why is everyone talk Teofimo Lopez? Is some Thailand, Honduras guy?
Some Honduran guy?
He has not fought five people. He is not a name. He fights guys who just come into a boxing gym. It was great. And you know what? He's more right than he is not. Teofimo Lopez has still not fought a person who tried to fight back against him.
Stop it, Magdaleno.
Let him get in there against Richard Commey. Let him get in there against Robert Easter. Let him get in there against another good lightweight. It ain't happened yet. Edis Totley, well, he was a former European champion. I mean, get out of here.
Now, you're not wrong on that. And
he looks great, look, but like, 2 months ago, he got a lot of proving left to do.
After his last fight, or after he knocked out Rock Hard Mighty with one punch, we were like, we don't want a Fernando Vargas situation. We don't want a situation where a guy's 21 and he looks so great that you throw him in there with unbeaten prime Felix Trinidad and you just go, look, I don't know if he's ready or not, but I need to see what happens. Cause sometimes guys will go out on the shield and stunt their growth. I just found it interesting. I thought the pre-fight package they did on Lopez and his father was brilliantly done by ESPN, and it had Max sitting at the dinner table with Teo, and it really put over how confident, how bold, and the fact that this could be a special all-time talent in Teo. It could not be at the same time. We don't know yet, but I just found it interesting for all the talk about Loma coming in. Afterwards, it was more about Richard Commey. It was more about let's take a step back. Found that interesting, Rafe. Found that interesting. Still, he impressed with Edis Totley. There's nothing you can say bad about his game, Rafe. Max nailed it. He's got that quick twitch fiber down. He can box a little bit, and he hits hard for this division. I mean, a lot of guys hit hard at lightweight. Do they carry the power up? We'll find out. But he hits that Spanish guy, Rafe, he hits hard.
I mean, he has an explosiveness that really, really pops off the screen when you watch him fight, and also in person, of course. Brian, let me flip it on you a little bit, though. Is Lomachenko's dismissiveness a defensive tactic? Is he saying he doesn't need to fight this guy who hasn't fought anyone because maybe he sees something? He's like, oh, that guy, he's got some real juice.
I think it's part of it, to be honest. I think it's part of it's the whole idea of we don't know how great he is, Rafe, because every time he's going to step up, he steps up in leaps and bounds. So I think with Lomachenko, it's that same thing. It's like in his head, okay, I can outcraft this guy, I can dance around him, but he doesn't just have power. He has explosive power that's creative and well-timed and can kind of come out of nowhere with an uppercut at close range. You're like, whoa, I wonder if Loma too is sort of just going, okay,
this guy hasn't fought anyone yet and maybe I shouldn't be the first one.
Look, Top Rank has reloaded very quickly. At the beginning of this ESPN relationship, Rafe, we were like, okay, they've got maybe the two best pound for pound names, but who else they got? Against who? Rafe, they've reloaded with these prospects. And Saturday night, the main thing you can say about this pay-per-view, whether you were entertained by Con Crawford and that justified the $70 or not, their guys who have next are looking damn good, and Top Rank's matchmaking is always brilliant, but they're ready to reload quick now on the ESPN level. They're really ready. They got fighters you need to see every time, Rafe.
Yeah, I mean, certainly you would say that about Teofimo Lopez, Shakur Stevenson at this point. Let's hope he does not face any long-term legal difficulties given his, you know, beating up a civilian in a parking lot. What is wrong? I'm sorry. I shouldn't dwell on that.
I sat down. By the way, people were ripping ESPN. I'm going to give ESPN credit. They brought that up. They handled it on the air. They put a full screen with the timeline of when he got arrested, when the video came out. They even took Andre Ward, his co-manager, off of the broadcast and kind of pushed Andre and were like, look, you know, what happens next now with your fighter with this type of negativity? I thought they handled it well, Rafe.
Did they show the video?
No.
Oh, well, in that case, I mean, they held back a little bit then.
All right, make that money, player. Let's talk about Shakur. I sat down with him in an interview that never saw the light of day due to a technical difficulty. Rafe, he was fantastic in that interview. Called out Tank Davis, called out Ryan Garcia, called out everyone, called out Freddie Roach. I mean, he was just calling people out.
He called out Freddie Roach?
Well, Freddie Roach was like, if Christopher Diaz can't beat a guy with 10 pro fights, then maybe he should retire. That's basically what Freddie Roach said. So, Shakur really laid out the fact that he said specifically, Bob Arum told him, do not step up to this level against Christopher Diaz. We're not sure that you're ready. This is too big of a gamble. I respect how much Shakur believes in his ability. He's just 21, doesn't have a lot of pop, but you saw the proof in the pudding, Rafe. And in that interview I did with him that you'll never hear, he was like so damn confident, like insanely confident, Rafe. And he talked about how him and Crawford are like a comedic duo. Like they're like best buds and they spar a lot. And he says he gets moments against Bud Crawford when they're sparring. deal with that. Do with that what you might. But Rafe, I was very, very impressed. Yeah, the last two rounds are pretty boring and he fought from distance, but he was the bigger man, it seemed, against Christopher Diaz. And Rafe, he's got special skill. Well, I don't know about when Tim Bradley coming out and saying he'll beat every 126 tomorrow. I don't know about that. I'd love to find that out. Him against Oscar Valdez, Rafe, that could be spectacular.
I mean, Carl Frampton just signed a fight with Top Rank.
He wants Warrington, too. He keeps calling out Warrington. Rafe, Shakur has cocky balls.
Yes, he does.
Rafe, we are not a potty. We are not a potty humor podcast. All right, can you get serious for a second, please? Look, he really impressed me with his speed, with his angles, with his slickness, with his confidence. I'm just saying, Rafe, they have something here where the last few steps up the ladder, I was sort of like, how good is this guy really, you know?
Yeah, no, I mean, that's what was so impressive about this, because this was, you know, Christopher Diaz, one loss, had a you know, kind of a paper title last year, but still was fighting at a world-class level. And Stevenson just went in and washed him. Diaz was never in that fight. I didn't see Diaz having really any moments of success. You know, he couldn't close the distance. He couldn't get inside. Stevenson was too elusive for him. Midway through the fight, Stevenson starts really, really just lighten him up with combinations. It was a really impressive performance. It made you think, wow, I wouldn't mind seeing him in against some of these Warrington championship type level fights, even though at just 10 fights, you would think, this is not time yet. He's pushing. These guys are making that case for themselves.
Rafe, do you like afterwards the attempt at putting out sort of a villainous Money May persona in the post-fight interview saying, I'm the next Floyd Mayweather, I'm the next Sugar Ray Leonard? Like, he's going for it, Rafe. He's cocky as all hell, but it's sort of underwritten by a likability. I mean, he has a very young face. There's sort of this like young kid element to it. I'm not turned off by him is really what I'm saying.
In fact, I'm turned on by him. I actually have been watching the video of him beating up civilians in parking lots and just getting just fully engorged, just nonstop. He's amazing. That baby face while he's punching guys who are on the ground. I love it.
Folks, this is the kind of fight that's going to stop traffic.
Literally it did, Rafe. That fight in the parking garage, literally it stopped traffic. All right. Yes, Danny has a stick. Also on that pay-per-view card, Felix Verdejo gets a decision win over Brian Vasquez. Rafe, I've seen experts like Dan Rayfield score that 8-2. I don't know what fight they were watching, Rafe. I thought Vasquez won that fight. I thought Verdejo looked average and human, and they nailed it on the broadcast. There's no variety to what he does. He just comes forward, 1-2, the same thing. Rafe, there's something wrong here. This was basically pitched on the air as Top Rank saying, this is your last chance, Felix, to be something. I interviewed Felix last week. He's cocky, but he's almost like he almost just no-sells the motorcycle accident. He no-sells the fact that he admits a couple years ago he wasn't doing outside the ring the things he should have done. Success, you know, prospectness got to his head. Rafe, I don't see a future star here anymore. I see a guy, you know what I see? Remember those dudes in high school that were like the star linebacker on the football team and they were like just slamming top chicks and they were like could get arrested and get the charges taken off and they could like do any drug and show up the next day and still get good grades and still score 4 touchdowns in a game. And here's the deal, Rafe. They were way cooler than me at 17. But by like 20, they're working third shift at the grocery store, Rafe. They're changing my oil. You know what I'm saying, Rafe? See me now, right? Know my name now. Felix Verdejo was slaying chicks in high school, Rafe. Right now, he doesn't look like the guy anymore.
I would just say that maybe he was a little overrated as a prospect. I mean, we saw him beat up that crazy Thai guy, that one Thailand guy in Macau on one of those Manny undercards. Really entertaining fight. I love whoever that Thai guy was. He was hilarious. He was sticking his tongue out at Verdejo the whole time, was getting the crap beaten out of him. I still love that. That's my favorite Felix Verdejo fight. And that was probably that may have been his best moment. Look, it happens. Prospects don't pan out for whatever reason. Maybe they weren't as talented as they thought they were. Maybe they screwed up and got lost along the way. it happens, and it seems to have happened with Verdejo. He ain't coming back to be a great fighter.
He ain't. So at this point, if you're top rank, and by the way, I just nailed it.
It ain't.
Build him up.
And it won't. And you not. And you ain't.
Felix, very handsome man still. But he ain't. So Rafe, if you're top rank, do you build up Teofimo Lopez versus Felix Verdejo at 135 and get your boy sent to hell?
Sure. Build him up and cash him out.
All right. Let me lick you up. Let me cash you out. Yeah. Turn around, babe. Let me lick you all around. Oh, just don't ask what's on the USB stick. Yeah.
Somebody slipped me a Jimmy.
All right. Rafe, DSG's back. And he's back with a bang. Fox. By the way, shout out to Fox for ending this card before any of the good top rank fights really went off. Like, this was good timing on Saturday night. The 8 p.m. start that was a 5 p.m. Pacific time start at the House of Hardcore Dignity Health Sports Park. DSG was back, Rafe. He knocked down Adrian Granados three times, just manhandled him to get the impressive TKO win. I think it was sixth round around there. And here's the deal, sort of under the radar. DSG realized following the loss to Porter that he was fading a little bit late, that maybe with all the things that come with being the swag champ, he was living a little bit off reputation. So for this camp, he brought in a new nutritionist. You see, he brought in Briscoe for the first time with the goatee.
I did see Briscoe in the corner. I always love to see the Briscoe. Hey, you know, in case Angel needs to hear those words, you know, Poppy, I gotta stop it. He's gonna die.
Your son's gonna die in there. He revamped his conditioning and nutrition. Rafe, he looked like $1 million. The one thing you could say about Adrian Granados, the guy has balls. He has never been stopped. He always pushes you to the limit. There was no limit here, Rafe. The limit was the end of Danny's left hook, the finishing punch. Rafe, he looked fan-friggin-tastic. Was it a matchup? He was supposed to win, yes. But to be honest, he was supposed to win that by decision because Granados is tough. He can do a couple things. All Granados could do was run into those punches, Rafe. I'm really, really impressed. I'm not playing the PBC line here. I was 100% impressed by Danny Garcia now saying, look, I'm ready. Manny, Errol, Porter, Keith, who wants me? I'm ready.
I was also very impressed. I did think that Danny Garcia looked great in that fight. I think we may be giving Adrian Granados a little bit too much credit here. What is this reputation really based on? He was the guy who showed up and hung in there against Adrian Broner and Sean Porter in get back fights which both of them didn't really seem to take that seriously. So
he stopped Amir Imam.
That's true. He did that. And then Jose Ramirez ended up beating Amir Imam too. Pull up that box rec for Adrian Granados. He's fighting like 3-11 guys in between there to rack up wins. He is a little bit of smoke and mirrors there. And it's a thing where against guys like Broner and Porter, who doesn't have great power, Broner, who is just not active enough and doesn't really want to win a fight, he'll just take it if he can.
Wow, you're straight up. I see how he called Granados C-level trash. That's where you're going with this.
Yeah. He was maybe he's B-level trash, but he was tailor-made for Danny Garcia, is what I'm saying.
You were right. In 2018 and in September, he beat a guy who was 3-11-2. Good.
See?
God. I mean, yeah.
He's padding that record.
He looks he looks in the ring visually, not style and ability, but visually. Doesn't he sort of look like a poor man's Oscar De La Hoya? Just visually? Like a young Oscar?
I don't know why. He's too thick. Oscar is lanky.
Alright, Oscar was a freak though, as Wash Gill told us. But, look, Rafe, this accomplished what it was supposed to, which was put Danny Garcia on Fox and rev the engine for a big welterweight bout. I'm just saying every punch was landing. I mean, he was much more aggressive than normal DSG.
Yeah. And it was fun, man. It was just a fun ass whooping to watch. Cause when Danny can't miss, when he is just dialed in with that overhand right. And then just all that first left hook knockdown was the most beautiful left hook knockdown in that boxing ring in that arena since Nonito Donaire. Boom! Jeffrey Mathibula. Just, I mean, that was a work of art.
Was that the main event of Rios Alvarado 1? Or was that its own main event?
No, that unfortunately was Nonito versus what's his name? Toshi Takanishikazu.
Some Japanese guy.
I'm sorry. Toshiaki Nishioka.
Yes. Thank you. Yeah, remember Lamps was in the crowd for that because it wasn't a HBO World Championship boxing fight. That was weird. All right.
Boxing after dark, baby.
Rafe, where are you going next? If you're the PBC matchmaker, where are you going next with DSG? Because it doesn't seem like Floyd's coming back, as we got fooled by that ridiculous announcement. So do you do Manny Thurman and what?
Oh, I forgot. Well, there's been some talk about maybe allowing Danny to cross the street and fight Terrence Crawford. Could we allow that to happen? Because I've seen people making this case online. I believe it was our guy Evan Rakowski. Maybe Kurt Emhoff has also said it, that there's, with all of the people, with all the great Walter Waits in the stable at PBC, why not take a chance with one of them? Why not let one of them go out there and really try and win this fight against Terrence Crawford? Because if you do, if you would go in as an underdog, but if somebody like Danny Garcia, who would be the best Walter Waite that Terrence Crawford has faced, if Danny Garcia goes in and wins that, then all of a sudden PBC is holding all the gold in that division and can really run the table, make gigantic fights all on their own. I mean, why not use that wealth of talent in the division to allow one of these guys to get that shot and prove that they are that good?
So Bob, another kind of odd comment on Sunday, Bob Arum said, I don't want to, Terrence's not going to fight Danny Garcia. Bob basically says Terrence Crawford and Sean Porter are not on the level. The only fight to make that's on the level of Bud is Spence. So Bob straight up poo-pooed the idea, which again, wouldn't you think he should be like, wow, Danny Garcia looked great on Saturday. He could really give Terrence Crawford a challenge. Let's make that fight. What if we send PBC $5 million? Will they make that fight? We'll put it on ESPN pay-per-view. Just weird responses from Bob, which by the way, because a lot of people are tweeting me and it makes sense. Who the hell are you going to match Crawford with next, Rafe? Not Besputin. Not one of my Mexicans. One of my Ukrainians. Not a Mean Machine. Not anyone. Kell Brook? You think they'll go Kell Brook? He was in the crowd.
Honestly, I don't hate it. I mean, Kell Brook hasn't looked good since losing to Errol Spence. He fought once or twice. He went up to 54 and back down again. He hasn't looked good. But still, I could see him getting his act together for a big fight. And he's a legit talent. And outside of the Errol Spence loss, oh well, and the Triple G loss, he's been through some rough.
He's
rough
made the
nights.
Order, but Bud's gonna stop him late, and it's gonna be a win though that we critically give him credit for, I think. As well
it's
as
a, look, it's a more legit fight than Amir Khan was.
Yes. So if they don't let if PBC does not allow one of their big name Walter Waits across the street, somebody's going to be left out. Because if they do Pacquiao Thurman, then Spence will have to fight either Porter or Danny Garcia. Somebody's going to be left out in 2019. It's going to be interesting to see whom. Is Danny, because he's a bigger star than Porter, and because Porter has a title and Danny doesn't, do you do Spence DSG on pay per view?
If they want to do it, I mean, shoot, if I can avoid that Porter Spence fight, I mean, I love your daddy, Sean Porter, but I would much rather see Danny Garcia in that fight. I don't care if there's another belt in it with Sean Porter.
Wow. You like that? You don't think Sean Porter has any chance because of the lack of power?
That is correct.
Interesting. Interesting way to look at it. All right, Rafe, we're deep into the show. We got to keep going. I've talked too much about cable companies and crap. On this undercard, Andrew Ruiz Jr. in his PBC debut stops some Russian guy. By the way, who was that Russian guy? Was it Dimitrenko?
Yeah, Alexander.
Like trash, bro. He looked like trash in there. Andy Ruiz Jr. was still fat, much new tattoo on Titi he had, Rafe. A lot more going on there.
Tattoo on Titi saying Ege.
I mean, he let his hands go, but the craziness is how this story connects with the big baby failed drug
test. He let
the
breast fly, baby.
Yeah, that we'll get to. And Andy Ruiz Jr. threw his name big time into the AJ sweepstakes after this victory and claims he beat Joseph Parker, maybe even better than Joshua did, when Joshua unified belts in that boring decision. Interesting. What's your take on Ruiz with PBC? And how is he now, because he's PBC, going to cross the street back to DAZN and fight AJ?
I feel like if Andy Ruiz gets a shot at that, they gotta let him do that. That would be outright malfeasance to have Andy Ruiz with a shot at that fight and that money and then not let him take it because it was with DAZN. I can't imagine that he is that valuable to the PBC's plans with Fox and with Showtime that he's not allowed to go take that opportunity. People were wondering if it was good management to counsel Deontay Wilder away from those opportunities. Well, it would be crazy to keep Andy Ruiz if he gets that call. I think that it's not the worst fight. I mean, Ruiz is a talented guy. The thing I would be worried about there is that if you almost want to like make an agreement with AJ to carry him a few rounds or something, because
yeah, we'll just cheat. We'll just lie and steal and cheat. That's great.
I just mean like if AJ blows him out in one round or something like that, it will look so bad. Like it will be because then people who don't know anything about Ruiz, that he actually, you know, he has nice hand speed. He's a good boxer. He fought on even terms with Joseph Parker when Joseph Parker was an undefeated champion. But the average fan who's just, you know, paying $20 for DAZN to watch this random heavyweight fight at the Garden may not know that. And they're going to be like, who is this fat tomato can they got in here? Like, so you gotta make that fight look respectable if it happens. Ruiz might be good enough to do it on the merits, but I would want a little insurance.
Right after the fight, before Ruiz kind of woke up to the idea that he can make a ton of money against Joshua last minute, he was calling out Adam Konachny. Could you imagine that fight?
You should get beat by a man with titties. Come on, man.
You got him.
Somebody's getting beat by a man with titties in that one. And by the way, Dwyer loves the hand speed of both. I could play you 10 Dwyer sound drops on how much he loves Andy Ruiz. Also on that PBC card in Carson, Brandon Figueroa wins a title at, I believe, is it Junior Feather? Or was it Bantam?
I think he's 122.
Yeah, Junior Feather.
That would be Junior Feather.
Against some
yeah.
guy you never heard of, stopped him. He did the Figueroa thing, which is throw a million punches and get up in your ass the whole day. He's a good
Yeah, but he's
boy.
In shape. He's got a little craft. He's got very pretty eyes. He's got a nice looking girlfriend. I'm in on this guy. I'm all in on the heartbreaker.
That was his sister. Did you see that whole development?
That was his sister?
From ringside, they kept showing that late A. That was his sister, who's also his strength coach. Revisit her Instagram collaborations. Wow, Rafe, that might be we might have to get old man Nigel Collins onto that. I know he loves Kel Brook's chocolate brownie sister, but you got to get on this train.
Wow.
You know what I'm saying?
It's just all forms of inappropriate. Yeah, well, that's a good-looking family. You know? What happened to Omar?
Well, into DAZN over the weekend from the Great Britain, the White Rhino, Dave Allen, stopped that absolute weirdo, Lucas Brown, but he stopped him to the butt. Here, I'll give the Rhino credit. He has not looked great lately. He got in shape for this main event. He looked good. He stops him to the body with a vicious hook. And then afterwards, did you see that great tweet by Darren Barker saying, I would have gotten up from that? Damn right. He had no business getting up, but he probably would have, Rafe.
Look, Darren Barker, I would believe there's no body shot in the world that can keep him down after he got up from what Wash Gill put on him in that round.
I love it. I love it. Why isn't the White Rhino being the last minute AJ guy? Wouldn't that? Well, then again, you'd have to pull that fight out of MSG.
He's so not good, man. He's a lovable guy, but he just doesn't belong in that fight. Eddie Hearn has also said that he would prefer to get an American in there to fight AJ in the U.S. for that debut, which leaves not great choices. You know what? We can talk about that for a minute.
Well, we're going right transition right into the latest news, Rafe, and that's the lead story, good. Big Baby Gate, and the idea of who the hell is Anthony Joshua going to fight on June 1st. Keep going where you were going.
Well, what I was going to say is that it is really disappointing, Brian, all of the top name heavyweights who are jacking out of that opportunity and saying things like it's not enough time, 6-7 weeks is not enough time to prepare for this fight. This is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity for some of these guys. Adam Konachny may never get a shot this good again. He might get a shot at Wilder, maybe, but that's less money than he would make probably against AJ. Same thing for Luis Ortiz. Ortiz may not get another shot at Wilder. Wilder probably is not going to be in any rush to give him that shot. These guys are out here saying not enough time. You know what I hear when they say not enough time? they're saying not enough time, not to train and get into shape for a big heavyweight fight, but not enough time to cycle off of what I'm on right now.
Dude, there is so much.
They're all on the Q14, 16, 17, yes. Whatever Big Baby was on, the
T182 graphic calculator. Oh. Yeah. Rafe, so here's the thing, Rafe. That's a cynical take, but I think you might be right on. It's interesting how many people are turning down, but I think you're wrong on this part. So the big – look, we're going to get into Big Baby in a second. He failed for every possible drug. We can't do any more drugs because you've did them all. We got to wait till you die and smoke your ashes, Big Baby. But here's the deal. We read the reports, and by the way, Stephen Espinosa of Showtime had defiantly reputed a lot of these reports on Twitter and got into a lot of Twitter battles. But it seemed to be that Luis Ortiz was offered a ton of money to be the last-minute replacement against AJ on June 1st in DAZN. And was either told by PBC or offered a large amount of millions by PBC to say no, which, and then there was some people on Twitter saying Luis Ortiz just said no because, like you mentioned, it wasn't enough time to turn around and take the fight. I think this is what's happening, Rafe. I don't have inside sources, but here's the deal. If you're PBC and Wilder and you can't make Joshua or Fury fights for a while or at all, you have very limited options of fights people care about. A rematch against Luis Ortiz might actually be one of the biggest options you care about. And here's one thing you're missing. Deontay Wilder loves him some Luis Ortiz, the man, from the fact that they both had problems with their daughter's health. He loves him as a father that I think he would give him the payday and be welcome to that. And I think they could sell it from the idea of Luis Ortiz should have been winning on the cards. The judges screwed him. But he should have been leading on the cards at the time of the stoppage against Wilder, right? That was a competitive fight. I think that's really the biggest fight PBC can make for Wilder over the next year. Not Konachki, not Boobs Brazil. Wow, a lot of guys with boobs, by the way. Luis Ortiz is probably the best in-house fight you can make. So if any of that is true with PBC saying, hey, Luis, don't take that, bro. We'll cycle you a couple million not to take it. I wouldn't doubt it, Rafe.
It's 2019, Brian. A lot of heavyweight boxers have titties.
Yeah, that is true. Rafe, do you think there's any idea if you're PBC, if you're Al Heyman, would you rather one of your guys, like even Andy Ruiz, go roll the dice against AJ for, like you're saying, the idea of a big upset, could take those three belts back over to Showtime and do a unification with Wilder, although really it's not that easy because whoever would upset AJ would have to do the rematch on DAZN and would probably lose the rematch anyway. But let's just say in theory. Or if you're Al Heyman, do you want AJ to stay undefeated for a long time so you can pull him away from DAZN so the idea of a super fight with Wilder would be Mayweather-Pacquiao level?
Yeah, there is something going on here where I suspect that the reticence of a lot of the PBC affiliated fighters to take this opportunity to step in and face AJ right now may have something to do with PBC, Showtime, Fox, ESPN even wanting to maybe gang up a little bit and keep DAZN on the outs as much as possible. DAZN had something going here with AJ and Miller, which was somehow was looking like it was going to be the best heavyweight fight in the first half of 2019, which, you know, starting at the beginning of the year, you would have said, F no, then against over my dead body. Somehow they had lucked into that actually working out for them. Now it's all fallen apart. And this is in the network wars, in the streaming versus linear wars. This is a chance for them to kick DAZN while they are down and not give them a chance to save that date and have it look like crap and maybe hurt the subscriptions, whatever bump they were expecting to get. Or for all those people they were expecting, hey, we got them to sign up for the Canelo fight and they're going to stay on for the AJ fight. Well, maybe now those fans don't stay on for the AJ fight and DAZN doesn't keep as many subscriptions. And that's a shame. It's a shame that kind of like sort of Machiavellian business war strategy chessboard stuff is determining the quality of fights we see in such an obvious way that you can read the tea leaves like that. It shouldn't be that way. And you would think that some fighter would just say, F it, I want this fight. Give it to me or else there's going to be problems down the road because this is my shot.
Make that money, player.
Yeah, everybody got to eat, baby. But so far, people are holding the line, and 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 DAZN might be stuck holding the bag with AJ versus a bag of dog shite.
Yeah, I mean, who are the, I got a lot to talk about on this topic. Wow, we got a long show today. It is what it is. The names that you see floating out, now Andy Ruiz joins the mix. Luis Ortiz is in there, but look, he's not gonna take it. I don't think he's gonna take it. So there's some crap names. There's that American cruiserweight who has one loss, Michael Hunter, who lost to
Michael
Usyk.
Hunter.
Lost to Usyk on HBO a couple years back. Look, that's not a fight. You know, there's some, there's two guys you never heard of in that mix. There's a Manuel Char. If you're DAZN, Rafe, how do you salvage this? I mean.
They can't get, I heard Char, they can't even get because he's not been enrolled in VADA. Like that's how messed up the sport is. That Eddie Hearn is like the priority in finding a replacement is just getting someone who has been enrolled in VADA for the last few months. Because it's just the assumption that if he hasn't been, the moment that they go test him, the moment they stick a needle in him, he's gonna start squirting HGH out.
Oh God, that's disgusting. There was a headline in the midst of this that Eddie Hearn and Matchroom Sport have agreed to a co-promotional deal with Murat Gassiev, the slugging cruiserweight from Russia.
I don't like cameras, interview. I like training and fighting.
Rafe, he's a simple man, as we know. I thought this was gonna fix everything, right? Gassiev comes in with the resume, the former cruiserweight champion. You put him in there. He's 6'4". You put him in there against AJ. Everybody wins.
Why is that off the table? Has that
it's not,
been
no one's talking
seriously
about it.
At all?
I don't think anyone's talking about it. I think instead they want to, you know, slow build him and make him a thing and probably make him more of a long-term candidate. But it just feels like this June 1st card, like I don't even want to go to it. I live 2 hours away. I don't even want to go to it now, Rafe. I don't, you know, like what, it's going to be him blowing somebody away. I wish it could be Luis Ortiz last minute. I wish it could be somebody with a pulse. If it's Ruiz, yeah, whatever. I mean, we know how it's going to end. Dwyer's got a take, by the way, on the new heavyweight math.
Now I understand. In the real world, we hear that a guy's been offered millions of dollars or pounds for a fight, and if we were in his shoes and they said, yes, I'll give you £2 million for the fight, before the sentence is over, we would say, hey, I'll take that. You know, we'd be thinking, oh my goodness, this could pay for a lot of vacations. Right? Junior's really going to private school now, right? But these boxers understand that there's something called a gate. There's something called television money. Right? Boxers understand that they're in a position to make big money.
Make that money.
And might not be in that position if they get destroyed by the heavyweight champ in a fight for less than market value.
So he's saying if you take this fight at the last minute against AJ and you take lesser money than waiting around and keeping your record as puffy as it could be to get more money to face AJ down the road. Is that really what Dwyer's saying? He's saying make that money player, right?
He is definitely saying that. And he's saying that, you know, Junior could really go to private school now.
Well,
it's just a life-changing thing for him.
Rafe, if Dwyer was a real boxing fan and he got that call to make that life-changing money, he would go back to Campbell, California. He would turn back the lights on at Hooters. Great place to watch a Canelo fight, by the way. You know what happens next, right? Right? He would do that, Rafe, to serve those boxing fans in that area, to make that a service they still have. By the way, a lot of Bay Area boxing fans tweeting at me and saying, I concur, Dwyer's right on. Great place to watch a fight, right?
the amount of people who are like legitimately upset that the Hooters in Campbell, California is no longer there to serve their pay-per-view needs is really eye-opening. It really meant something to the community.
But Rafe, if we get anyone else of the names that we're hearing, this is what this fight's going to end up looking like.
In my opinion, he's a sacrificial lamb.
That's all we're going to see. But let's get into the big baby element real quick. Let's clown on this clown. Jarrell Miller first pops for an illegal drug, comes out and says, I 100% absolutely have no idea how this entered my system. I did not kiss that woman. I did not have relations with that drug. Let me get my B-side tested, even though no one's B-side ever bails them out. Then, Rafe, we find out he did EPO and failed the second test. Then we find out there's a third test out there for some other drugs we never heard of. The first drug, like I mentioned, was like GHB 1715.
Well, Right, right. He had HGH, EPO, and then the GB said the GHB is what Martin Murray was taking. That's the party drug.
I wish
that's
I had that sound ready. Yes, yes, you sent me that sound. By the way, yeah, Martin Murray, given the full details of that time he got arrested, which means he can't fight in the U.S., he drank a full bottle of GHB and went on a 24-hour bender of just robbing folks. Wow.
Street robbing. He got nabbed for street robbing.
Wow, I didn't take the sound because it's so hard to understand what he's saying. He's got some weird, where is he from again? He's got a weird ass,
I don't know where in the UK that's from, but you cannot listen to that on accelerated speed on a podcast. It will not make any sense.
Yes, yes it will. By the way, so Rafe, what do we say about Big Baby? I mean, it's not just like this was his biggest opportunity and he took a drug to cut weight, or he just rolled the dice and took the HGH and hope he didn't get caught. Rafe, he took everything. And by the way, if you read on EPO, the dangers and what could happen to your body, was it EPO or was it one of the other drugs he took? One of the drugs he took, I started reading up on, and the immediate issues that this does to your body are horrific. Oh, the GH1517. Yeah. That's horrifically bad for your body.
Yeah. I mean, it's a strange situation. Like how could he have expected to get away with all of that? When he signed up for VADA testing, and of course at the press conference, he was accusing AJ of having beefed up on roids over the years. How'd you gain that much muscle so fast? Nobody could do that. Blah, 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 blah. I mean, it's terrible, and it screws over Joshua. It screws over Eddie Hearn, who would, gave him that opportunity.
Eddie Hearn is mad, dude. He's mad that this big date that he spent a long time building up putting, cause by the way, Eddie does not promote Big Baby. It's a co-promotion deal between Greg Cohen and Dimitri Salida, but they've been sort of using him as a long-term potential AJ opponent for this moment to cash in New York City, US debut against a Brooklynite, against an unbeaten guy.
Yeah, the promotion was going great. They had the two terrible freestyles on New York radio. I mean, it was shaping up to be a fun event. The bad trash talk, the pushing, talking about the moms, the landlords, all kinds of paying rent.
I mean, let's stop the presses now. We know that AJ went on Sway in the morning in New York City and did a rap, and they played that rap back to Big Baby.
Find me fighting on June 1st at MSG, Lyrical MC in NYC, holding it down. I ain't a clown, I'm ready to rebound. I'm a knock Miller out around the eighth round. He can't round with the champ. I lick him down like a stamp. I'm gonna go down with the clown.
Time out. Hey,
lick him down.
Trash next.
Big Baby's like, no, he ain't licking me down. But after Big Baby popped for
too much Marvin Sees, let me lick you.
Yeah, exactly. Listen to this too much performance enhancing audio and injecting himself with too much performance enhancing everything. After he popped, they asked AJ his thoughts.
Still going ahead. The landlord will still come and collect his rent. And by the way, to Miller's mum, I still love you. And if there's anything I can do for you, just let me know.
Rafe, what is he offering?
Hey, whatever, he's offering to break her off a little something proper, I mean, whatever happens, whatever she needs. If she's feeling down, she's feeling low, AJ knows how to give her some comfort. Everybody's, I think, is what he's trying to say.
What is he trying to eat though when he says that? What is Miss, how, why is Miss Miller a part of this, Rafe? I know everybody's got to eat, but this is starting to get a little gross.
Right? I don't know, but Brian, you look at that video. The thing I love about that video.
Is make him toast myself.
Yeah, I don't want to think about Miss Miller with jelly or maple syrup. Keep going. Sorry, I'm obnoxious.
That video that AJ did, you could tell he wrote like a script out. He had it all planned, and then he's just sitting there in front of some bushes with no shirt on. It's the weirdest. It is the weirdest sort of. I don't understand how the situation that led to that, the recording of that video. I want to know the backstory. How did they plan it? Why did AJ think, it'll be really put this over the top as if I'm just sitting here with no shirt on?
It just sucks, Rafe, because December we had Wilder Fury. It exceeded expectations. It was a classic fight. There was a need for an immediate rematch because of the crappy decision. we were high on heavyweights, the Renaissance. We're going to get Wilder Fury 2, and then AJ and Wilder are finally going to fight each other. Or maybe Fury will win and throw a curveball here, and it'll be Fury Joshua in the zone in front of 90K. Alex Godinez front row. D's nuts. We were fired up, Rafe. And then the Schwartz was with you.
You got the Schwartz.
Fury needs the Schwartz, and then another.
I mean, come on.
And may the Schwartz be with you.
Now we got nothing, Rafe. We got nothing. Now, like you said, Wilder boobs Brazil is like a heavyweight Super Bowl. It's like, come on.
It is a plague of jacking upon the heavyweight division.
It's bad. It's gross. I don't like it. I don't want it. I don't need it. Thank you. All right, Oscar was a freak. Yes, yes.
They're just jacking it from everywhere.
Yeah.
Wow.
Speaking of jacking, that Floyd announcement that we wasted too much time teasing last week, thinking, is he going to come back? Is he going to fight Manny? Is he going to kickbox? Is he going to rematch Tension? It was some fantasy site. I don't even care, Rafe. Can we go back into full-on I-don't-care mode about Floyd? Is there anything Floyd could do to make you care?
Yeah, make a fight. If he wants to make a fight, I would care. Other than that, I don't care.
All right. What about this guy talking about comebacks? Tim Bradley Jr. telling Dan Rafael, guess what? I'd be open to a comeback 3 years removed from my last fight against one of two guys. Amir Khan, who we used to have the sound on the soundboard of him saying, I don't care if I'm in a wheelchair. Before I die, I will beat Amir Khan's ass. Which, by the way, now the fight may not make as much sense. Or maybe it makes more sense now. You can argue. Or Errol Spence Jr. He's basically saying, if I'm going to come back, I want to fight the best. And Spence is the best. I want to fight him. Here's the problem, Tim. I'm sure Top Rank's got some kind of rights on you. You're employed by ESPN and Top Rank. You ain't fighting Errol Spence Jr.
Good for Tim Bradley in that case, because that is a Errol Spence by murder situation.
Yeah, I mean, you can say what you will about the size of Tim Bradley's balls, and T-Street has talked about that on this show before. T-Street, where are you?
Inside that big scrotum is huge, huge testicles.
Yeah, they're big, right?
He's got real big balls.
Damn right. But just be careful, Tim. And actually, to be honest, Amir Khan is the perfect fight. It was the fight at 140, the Super Bowl that we never saw. Tim doesn't have a lot of power. We don't want to see him get hurt. We don't want to see Amir get hurt. It's kind of perfect, right?
Yeah, but what? I don't know. It's too late, Tim Bradley. I wanted you to stick around, but he didn't, and now I don't want him to come back.
What about if we dig up Ruslan from the Siberian jungle, wherever he is, under ice somewhere fishing? No?
I think he's like a mayor in a town in Siberia now. He's parlayed his boxing notoriety into a career in politics.
I've watched your voice. You're sick. You're barely hanging together. You got a 10-pound jug of water next to you. Let's get through this. Gary Russell Jr. is going to defend his featherweight title against Wash Kiko Martinez on the Wilder Brazil undercard May 18th in Brooklyn. Do you care?
Hell no.
All right. Victor Ortiz has come out and said, hey, look, you know what? I'm young. I shouldn't be taking this kind of punishment. But if Marcos Maidana is serious and he wants to come back, let's do the rematch.
Dude, this is nuts.
Rafe, you in?
Of course I'm in, man. I gotta be in on that.
Alright. I don't care how much Maidana weighs. He's sending VO to hell all day.
I don't know if Maidana has not fought in years. You wouldn't give VO a chance in that?
No. I won't. All right. Final bit of news. Dana White said Zuffa Boxing is not dead, Rafe. He says, I am making all my boxing moves after this summer. When the summer is over, you'll be hearing a lot about what I'm doing in the sport of boxing. Remember, he threw big money at both reportedly Golovkin and Mikey Garcia and got turned down. And Rafe just recently signed UFC Fight Pass streaming deals, as you give me the gross hand movement sign, as Dwyer would say, basically.
He pumps it more than once.
Yeah, I just watched Rafe do that. Rafe, so here's the deal. He says, quote, Boxing has Wilder and Fury, who just fought to a draw in an incredible fight that people love. The rematch ain't happening with those two, and neither one of those two are going to fight Joshua. These guys could do a round-robin fight and fight each other. You know, both guys could fight Joshua, and they'd kill it. They'd make so much money, and they would bring so much energy and life back to boxing. But these guys, meaning boxing, keep shooting themselves in the foot. Dana, I love your idealism. You saved a broken MMA, and you made it a league in which you hold all the cards and all the rules, and the best always fight the best. You ain't doing that in boxing, brother, because boxing to this day, Rafe, is filled with greedy criminals.
To this day.
So stop talking about how you're going to come into boxing. You're just going to waste your money. Thank you. Moving forward, weekend preview time. Do you care, Rafe? Are you ready? Do you have enough voice to close the show?
I care. I'm here for this. It's going to be a big weekend, brother.
All right. Before we do that, let's throw it to somebody who has a part in this big weekend, and that is unbeaten junior welterweight Regis Progre. The WBSS is back, and so is Regis. Fun interview coming your way. Enjoy. All right, stepping in, Regis Progre, one of the most exciting fighters in the sport, and Ruguru, maybe, just maybe, the best 140-pounder in the world today. Fired up to chat with you again. How you doing, bro?
I'm perfect, man. You can't say maybe. You got to say I am the best 140-pounder.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Maybe. Because
you
when I
maybe.
Read...
You said maybe.
Yeah, my bad on that. Let's remove that. Remove it from the record. What I'm saying here is when I look at the fine print, and I know, we know, of course, we're fired up for your semifinal bout in the World Boxing Super Series next Saturday, April 27th, on DAZN against Carol Relic. It's a title fight, of course, for the WBA belt at 140. That's your first title fight of your career. And I'm going, really? I've been considering this guy the best at 140 for like three or four fights now. But, yeah. Hey, they say the belt makes the man, or maybe the man makes the belt. How excited are you against Relic to sort of leave no doubt of where you stand at 140?
I mean, I can't wait. You know, that's the thing. I just really can't wait. This is my first, like, title shot. This is, like, this is the beginning of my legacy, you know. So, I mean, I can't wait to go out there and, you know, show people what I got. And, you know, well, people already know what I got, but I can't wait to go out there and get this belt. Basically, you know, this is like I said, this is the beginning for me. I've been doing it for a while now, but this is, you know, most fighters, you know, they fight when you're a child or whatever, or when you first start, that's what you want. You want a championship, and you know, this is gonna be the official one for me.
Absolutely. We're going to see this on DAZN 9 p.m. Eastern next Saturday from the Cajun Dome in Lafayette, Louisiana. And considering you're a New Orleans guy, we're going to see, what kind of crowd are we going to see? We're going to see Ruguru masks all over the dome here? What's going to happen?
Probably so. You know what? The thing is, it's perfect because it's halfway. I live in Houston right now. I'm from New Orleans, so we should have both crowds, both people, both cities coming and, you know, meeting halfway. And on top of that, Lafayette is a big-time fight city right now. It's a whole lot of amateur fighters, and it's a big-time fight time right now. So I think they're really excited about me coming, and, you know, I can't wait to go, and I can't wait to go put on the show. So it should see a real nice Cajun crowd.
Yeah, I'm loving that.
Lou Mass and all that type of stuff.
Lou DiBella, promoter of DiBella Entertainment, will be fired up as always as well. Excited for you guys for this big one. Do you ever wear the awesome Ruguru mask outside of the ring? You ever just prank, like, some solicitors at your front door? You ever get any other use out of it?
You know what? I don't. The Ruguru mask actually, it stays in New Orleans most of the time. Right now it's in L.A. So most of the time I don't even have it at my house. And, you know, I got kids, you know, so my kids will tear that damn thing up anyway. So I kind of keep it away. I kind of keep it away from my house, you know, because my kids will. It's a one-on-one. The mask is like $1,000. So I kind of don't want, you know, my kids to go mess it up because they, you know, my kids, they'll tear it up. You know,
$1,000. Good Lord. I mean, it's got a nice haircut on it. So, yeah, I could see where the fine details are there. Let's talk about this fight with Relic. For whatever some American fans may not know about the name or may go, oh, is that the guy that beat Barthelemy? Yeah, that's the guy that took Rancis Barthelemy up and down that ring. He's a champion in the WBA, one of the toughest fighters out there. What kind of style fight are we going to look at here? I'm just going to guess and say if Ruguru is in town, it's going to be fun. It's going to be fast-paced. But what are you expecting here?
Yeah, of course. I mean, it's definitely going to be fast-paced. But for me, it's always about what I feel like doing. I always go in the ring, and, you know, I work on so many different things in training camp. So I know I'm versatile. I can do so many different things. And I don't know. To be honest, I really don't know how I'm going to come out and fight. Today, you know, in sparring, I use my jab. Most of the time, I didn't even get touched in sparring. And, you know, I did a lot of defensive stuff, right, standing right in front of my opponent and didn't get touched, like on some Panera Whitaker stuff. So, I mean, I can't do that. But for me, it depends. It depends on what I see in them from the first round. I mean, if I feel like blasting them out, it depends. So for me, it all depends on what I feel like doing in the ring as soon as I get the next Saturday.
You know, it looked like this WBSS tournament was on the ropes for a hot second. It seems like the momentum is back. We're going to see the other semifinal bout May 18th in Scotland. Ivan Baranchuk and Josh Taylor. You're going to be a big time spectator for that one, I can assume. Who comes out of that fight in your eyes?
You know what? I really think it's almost an even fight. I give the advantage more to Josh Taylor, but I think it's kind of almost an even fight, man. I think Josh Taylor is, of course, he might be more of a better boxer. He has a good jab. He has decent power, too. But Baranchuk is a dog. Baranchuk will come, and he's going to try to knock his head off every punch. And we know that. That's how he fights. And, of course, he's tough, and he's going to just keep bringing it to him. So I don't think Taylor fought nobody like that. That's going to bring it to him yet. So it's going to be interesting to see. But I still favor Taylor more. And I should, most likely, I'll probably, thinking about it now, I'll probably go out to the Scotland just to, you know, be the live for the action.
I love it. Look, here's why fans love these World Boxing Super Series tournaments, Regis, because the best kind of forced to face the best. We saw it with the cruiserweights when Alexander Usyk came out with all four belts. If you beat Relic, you get the WBA. If you beat the winner, of course, of Taylor and Baranchuk, you'd have the IBF. You'd also get, though, that Muhammad Ali trophy given to the winner. It's a cool thing. How much does that mean for a fighter, though? A trophy named after such a legend. How much is that prize, along with the championship belts, in your vision as you look forward in this tournament?
I mean, it's huge, man. Ali, for me, is like one of the boxing guys to be. So, you know, just to get that trophy is like, you know, it's something that, you know, I really want. And I just can't wait. I mean, it's undescribable just to have that trophy. You know, I was in Moscow when Usyk got it. And, you know, the trophy is huge. And that's something that, you know, it's like I said, it's legacy. You know, that legacy, it'll never die. So I can't wait to, you know, just do it and get it and, you know, just have that, you know. And when we was in Moscow for the parents, Lonnie Ali was there. And, I mean, all that was just inspirational just to be in the presence of, you know, one of the Ali's. It was just very, very inspirational for me.
Yeah, no question about it. And like I mentioned, the winner of this tournament at 140 will have two of the four recognized titles. The other two, of course, are owned by one by Jose Ramirez, one by Mo Hooker. And if you come out of this tournament on top, some divisions, Regis, as you know, big fights can get made. It doesn't seem to matter. Other divisions, welterweight, heavyweight, we see a lot of, like, promoters, networks get in the way. How confident are you, if you win this entire tournament, that you could have a chance at unifying all four titles against those names I mentioned? Does this look like a division where you think it can happen?
Hopefully so. The thing is, hopefully so, you know. Just like you said, in some divisions, you know, you get mixed up, and you know they got the networks, they got the promoters and stuff. And I really don't think those fights are, you know, those fighters, promoters, you know, they, I don't think they will want to fight me no time soon. You know, when, you know, probably once I, you know, get the trophy and both the other belts, hopefully, you know, they can make the fight. But my thing is, you know, I wanna do the same thing Crawford did. He was undisputed. He took all four belts at 140. There's only a few fighters in history that did that. So I definitely want to do that. But if they offer me at 47, if they offer me something big at 147, then, you know, I might just go ahead and go up to 147. So for me, it all depends on what happens, what's the move after the tournament. after tournament is done, and then, you know, I kind of make my decision from there. But my plan, what I would want to do, not saying my plan, but what I would like to do is definitely get all the belts at 140. I would, you know, I would definitely want to do that and be undisputed and then move up to 47 in a perfect world. But, of course, we're not in a perfect world. We're in a not-so-perfect world. So if they offer me something at 147, maybe they might offer me a big fight at 147, then, you know, I'll go ahead and, you know, move up and just, you know, be happy with the two belts I have at 140. But it all depends on, you know, everything, because boxing moves crazy. Sometimes, you know, they might have the belt, and then next thing you know, they might not even have the belt, and then they might try to hold on to the belt and all that type of stuff. Somebody else might try to hold on to the belt. So, you know, we'll just see. We'll see. First, the main thing I just want to concentrate on is next Saturday against Relic and get the first belt before I start talking about all four belts.
Oh, yeah.
Get this first.
No question. And if you win this tournament, as we're sort of saying a what if, I mean, you'd be in a spot, like you said, where 140, 147, people will be knocking on your door. And about that, look, we sort of teased at it. There can be, you know, sides of the street, if you will, because guys get sort of exclusive offers on one network, or they get tied to one network. We've seen you have your biggest fights on DAZN. We've seen some big ones on ESPN. Is it strategic for you, being promoted by Lou DiBella right now, to keep yourself, I guess, almost like a television free agent, where you can go after the biggest fight and not be locked down? How do you sort of look at that?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I think that's the perfect thing right now. You know, just to stay as a free agent, and, you know, so I don't, yeah, just like you said, so I don't be locked out from no big fights. You know, it's big fighters, it's people with belts at 140 and 147 in all, you know, basically every network right now. So right now I can kind of fight on whatever network, and I can fight, you know, whatever, whenever I want, basically. So I think it's a good deal right now, until, of course, you know, the money always makes a difference. So if somebody offers me a big fat check, then, you know, we'll see what happens after that.
Yeah, well, what Regis is saying is he'll fight on the Lifetime Network if the money's there. He has no problem with that whatsoever.
Oh, what? Of course. What? We'll have to bring Lifetime Boxing up. That's all. I'll start Lifetime Boxing.
I think we can make that happen. All right. I said off the top.
I think, and that's an older crowd, too, so that's cool. The older crowd will start looking at
me. The older crowd still watches regular TV. You're right. That's a good plan right there. All right. If you're not the man at 140, some people like this guy, Jose Ramirez. And Regis, I was there ringside his last fight. Kind of controversial. First of all, one heck of a fight against Jose Zepeda. Majority decision win. Hey, I kind of thought Jose won that fight. What was your opinion of that performance from Jose Ramirez, and where his standing is next to you as one of the kings of this division?
Jose Ramirez, I mean, he's, for me, he's a, you know, I think he's a B-level fighter. He's okay. You know, you saw what happened in his last fight against Zepeda. To be honest, I only watched about seven rounds, and from the seven rounds, it looked like he was having a hard time with him. It looked like he was struggling. You know, it wasn't, he didn't really look like a champion should look, basically. And maybe if they wasn't in Fresno, California, maybe it would have went a different way, you know. So, I mean, you know, he's okay, but I definitely don't think that he's on the level that I'm on right now. I think that, you know, he's one dimensional. You know, he's a good Mexican fighter. He comes forward and just, he can throw a lot of punches. Of course, he's going to be in shape. But if you look at somebody like, if you look at Zepeda, you know, Zepeda, I think he outboxed him a majority of the fight. And, you know, he stuck his jab on him and hit him with some, you know, some clean shots. Now, if he takes those same shots from me, it's not going to be a good look for him, basically. I think, you know, I think that's possibly could be a knockout. And I don't think he would land, if I really fight slick like I really want to, he won't land a punch on me. I don't think, you know, he'll probably land a few punches, but it won't be nothing telling, nothing hurting, nothing that'll really hurt me or nothing like that, you know. So, I mean, the whole thing with him, I definitely want to fight him. Me and him, you know, me and his man, we had words and stuff like that. I felt that he should have entered into the World Boxing Super Series, but he took the route to go to Fresno and defend it over there. You know, so hopefully he keeps the belt. He keeps the belt when I get out, and then that hopefully, and it could be a huge fight down the line. I really think it should be there to be a huge fight down the line, and then we can unify or whatever, you know. So that's kind of my thoughts about, you know, Jose Ramirez.
Wow. That would be one hell of a fight for the fans. There's really no question about that. The idea of either staying at 40 or go to 147, is there any weight considerations there? Is it hard for you to make 140? I look at you as a very big junior welterweight.
Yeah, no, it's definitely not. I actually make weight comfortable. I don't know. I think the older I'm getting, the better I'm getting at making the weight. I'm getting more disciplined. Because when I was a little younger, you talk about like, you know, when I was like 23, 25 or something, I can sit in the sauna for an hour and lose 10 pounds or 12 pounds or something like that. But now I don't need to do that now. I'm good on my diet. I have people that's cooking good for me and all that stuff. So the weight now, like the weight is getting, I don't know why the weight is getting easier. It felt like it was harder when I was younger, but now as I'm getting older, the weight is just getting easier for me. It's getting easier to make. So, I'm making it, of course, it's always going to be some type of struggle, but I'm making it pretty, I feel like I'm making it pretty comfortable. But as far as 147, when I plan to go up to 147, I'll get on the weights and put some weight on me and then, you know, then go up.
Yeah, that's great. Whatever you're doing, keep it up. No question about it. I want to ask you, Neil, we've talked to you about this before on this podcast, how you do sort of cross training. You work some MMA stuff. How has that helped you in boxing at all? Has there been any ways in which it surprised you?
Yeah, I mean, the whole thing, my wife is Brazilian, and right now I got some of her family over here staying with me in Houston right now. So I went out there, and I'm just a fan of fighting, period. You know, I just love to fight. I'm a fan of fighting, and it's something that I just want to learn. So when I went to Brazil, you know, I was out there training, doing some jiu-jitsu and MMA and stuff, training with the MMA fighters. They welcomed me with open arms, you know, fighters, everybody kind of respect fighters. I don't know why, but fighters get respect from everywhere. So, that's kind of, you know, that was the main reason, you know, that I did it. I just was out there. And I felt like doing it, and, you know, I want to continue doing it right now. So after the fight, most likely I'll go back and, you know, do the same thing.
Yeah, but does it make you feel, like, stronger in any way? Does it give you more stamina? Has there ever been any sort of cool added benefits that you didn't expect?
To be honest, I really didn't do it as much, that much to say it's an added benefit, basically. As far as that, I think, yeah, as far as overall body strength, yeah, you definitely get stronger wrestling around on the ground, and you definitely get a little stronger from doing that. I feel like I've always been a pretty strong person, but, yeah, when you're doing jiu-jitsu on the ground, all overall wrestling, I think, it definitely will get you stronger, and your stamina will be a little better.
All right, I'm not trying to stir the pot and mix things up here, Ruguru, but there's this hot prospect Teofimo Lopez, who's basically wants to fight everybody, wants to fight him now. I can't hate on the guy, he's exciting, but he doesn't think he can make 35 any longer. He wants Loma tomorrow, and then he wants to move up to 40. You've shared a bill with him before on an ESPN card. Would you ever share the ring with him? Is that a fight you would be interested in?
Yeah, of course. I think it'll be an interesting fight. He's a really exciting fighter. But let him test the water at 40. Right now, I feel like, you know, he's still a prospect right now at 135. So, you know, he definitely got I'm soon to be a world champion at 140. So he got a lot of proving to go. Of course, he's good. He's exciting at 135, but he has a lot of proving. He has a lot of things to do, at 140. When he comes up to 140, he has a lot of proving to do. But of course, I duck nobody, run from nobody. If it happens, then it happens. But he has, he has a lot of proving to do. He's still a prospect right now at 135. He has a whole bunch of proving to do right now.
If I give you the key in boxing and said, Regis, after this tournament, let's say I can see the future. I say you're going to win this WBSS tournament, and then you can fight anybody in the sport. Your choice will make it happen. Who would you pick?
You know who I always want is Crawford, Terrence Crawford.
Oh,
I always
oh, wow.
definitely always, it's either Ramirez or Crawford, but Crawford is way better than Ramirez. I'm always in the sport because I'm a competitor, you know, and I want to prove I'm the best. And I really think that when everything is said and done, you know, you talk about 20 years down the line from now, as far as all the people, most of the fighters that's out right now, I think Crawford might be remembered more than a lot of them, you know. So that's why I would want to fight him. That, you know, I would definitely love to get a fight him and get a win over him one day. And but I always want to fight Crawford just because how good he is. And I'm a competitor, and I want to prove myself, you know, I'm definitely one of the best. I know I'm one of the best at 140, but I don't want, you know, I want to prove that I'm the one of the best in the world, period, regardless of weight class, talk about pound for pound. So, yeah, I feel like after the tournament, you know, I probably would like to fight, you know, get a few fights at 147 and then, you know, go after Crawford if everything goes right, or Ramirez, either one, Ramirez or Crawford.
Hot fire with Regis Prograis, getting me all fired up for the potential there. Well, I'll tell you this, though. If you come out of this tournament on top, it's going to be hard to keep you out of that pound-for-pound mix. You're unbeaten. We'll see you Saturday, April 27th, for that WBA Junior Welterweight World Title against reigning champion Carol Relic. Semifinals, WBSS, in the zone. Ruguru, always a pleasure, my man. Love the confidence. Love the fire. Best of luck to you.
Thank you, man. Thanks for having me.
And we're back. Special thanks to Regis Prograis. Rafe, you're a big Ruguru guy. So am I. The guy's just fun. The guy's just got a great accent, a great attitude, wants to fight everybody. How can you not like this guy? The question is, will he be the last man standing at the end of the WBSS?
The tournament is great. I mean, if it leads to the anticipated Josh Taylor Regis Prograis championship. I don't know who I'm picking that. I love both of those guys. I'm really high. I think they're both have real world class potential, like possible pound for pound potential. And them facing each other, it's a dream, man.
All right, this is a big hipster weekend, as we said off the top. Basically, here's the deal: boxing hasn't been great in 2019. It's been segregated, stretched. Like Devin Alexander's anus, right? It's been very, Yusef.
Destroyed.
It's been very just stretched and segregated. The pay-per-view fights have been kind of non-pay-per-view quality on paper. We haven't seen a lot of creative fights, but this weekend you're getting fights that if you're a hardcore fan, you want to see, you need to see, you have to see. So I want to start right there with Ruguru. It's Saturday night in DAZN, Rafe, Lafayette, Louisiana, in the Cajun Dome, 2 hours from where this man is from. Main event, Carol Relic defends his WBA junior welterweight title against Ruguru in the WBSS semifinals. Are you fired up for this, Rafe?
I am fired up. I know people like Carol Relic. I just don't see it, man. I think Ruguru is going to put it on him. I think Ruguru will stop him.
Wow.
I think he could stop him like Danny could stop Canelo.
You know, basically, Relic made his name off of what he did with Rances with Wolves and that close
exactly,
loss.
Which don't mean jack nothing to me.
Wow, we will see Rances this weekend, so apparently Rafe doesn't care already
for
that one.
I won't see Rances this weekend.
I like what Regis was saying in the interview, though, about how we know him as a pressure guy, but he's working a lot more on becoming more of a boxer, being patient, being slick. Rafe, this guy's good, and here's the deal, something we didn't get into earlier, we probably should. We're talking about what does Terrence Crawford do next? And I talked to Ruger about it. You heard that. But, you know, we're like, Kell Brook, maybe, if you can't get a PBC guy. Really, I think, for Bob, you try to speed up this WBSS, which you have no hand in right now, and you hope the winner that comes out of this, you hope it's Regis Prograis, who's fought on ESPN before in main events. You hope you build Prograis, unbeaten, 140 champ, moving up in weight against Crawford. That's a hell of a fight.
That's a hell of a fight. And if it ends up being Josh Taylor who wins that tournament, that's a hell of a fight too. He's a taller 140, might scale up to 147 better. And we've already seen him pull out a really tough competitive fight with Victor Postol, who we remember fought Terrence Crawford.
Yeah, Ray, you could hear Rafe's voice is leaving him. His health is leaving him. This show will kill
him. My whole soul is leaving me.
Take his house away. All right, Rafe, that co-main event, I know you care about this. This is a semifinal in the bantamweight bracket of the WBSS World Boxing Super Series. Zolani Tete against Nonito Donaire, Philippines, Rafe. The Pinoy power. It's a unification fight for the WBO and WBA straps at 118. And be wary, Nonito, because we know what Zolani wants to do.
If I catch you with those, I will sing a lullaby song for you.
Rafe, we love Nonito. It's been a storied mini run back to contention here late in his 30s. He's got pop at 118. Is he going to hear the lullaby song?
I don't know. He may play the lullaby song for Tete. It's gonna be a cagey fight. It might be kind of boring with a lot of staring back and forth, trying to catch each other with counters. But it's a tough one to call. Do you favor one guy here? Clearly, I guess Tete, because he's the Russian, younger, fresher.
I favor the Russian. I favor Tete here. Look, Donito has devolved to this point in his career where kudos to him. He can actually cut back down in weight. He's gone as high as what, featherweight? He can cut back down to 118 and still make it, but he's a one-punch slugger. Zolani can fight and he's got pop. I feel like this will turn into a bit of a war, and Tete's at this point in his career is quicker with better technique. I feel like he could be lighting Donito up here. It could be one of those things where Nonito just keeps stalking as he's getting hit with big shots, and eventually he's caught, and eventually we stop the fight.
Well, if that's what happens, at least it saves Nonito from seeing Naoya Inoue in the championship.
Yeah, today, mister. Sonny Fredrickson on this undercard, the junior welterweight against TBA. I know you don't care.
Stop that crap.
Do you care deep on the undercard when rock hard mighty Mason Maynard, the native Louisianan, comes back on a short turnaround from a visit to hell via Teofimo Lopez, 6 rounds lightweights against Ariel Vasquez. Ray, if you're going to tune in early for this on DAZN?
Save big money at Menards. That's all I got to say.
Yeah. His Nards. Yeah. Okay. Let's start it out at the top of the pops this weekend. It actually begins Wednesday night. Do you care? This is kind of near you. It might be in your backyard. You might be able to hop on a jet plane, what do you call those things? What do you call those little tiny planes when they drop from one, just, you know, those,
something hopper, I think.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
A pond hopper. Or...
Yeah. Something like that. Chonburi, Thailand. We've got a title fight.
The dwarf giant.
Wanhan Manayothan versus Tatsuya Fukuhara. Rematch, 12 rounds for Menayothan's WBC strawweight title. Rafe, do you care?
Rematching? Nope.
Okay. Hey, how about this, Rafe? Thursday night, Las Vegas on UFC Fight Pass. Conor Coyle Robert Burwell.
Why? No.
8 rounds middleweights. Is that that's a Roy Jones Jr. event, right?
I'm sure it is. I don't care.
Nah, we don't care.
Yeah, unless it's not in New York, right? So it's not a lube event.
Nope. Thursday night, Indio, California, one of these weird DAZN Golden Boy Facebook things, but it's not on Facebook anymore. It airs like on regional cable stations. Steve Claggett versus Eves Ulysses Jr. rematch, 10 rounds junior welterweights. You don't care, right?
Don't care.
All right. Marlon Esparza, the female flyweight,
on that. No.
Stop that crap. All right, Rafe. You don't care about that. Let's get into what you do care about. This is for hardcores only. Friday night, we could be seeing a fight of the year. Inglewood, always up to no good at the Forum, your other backyard, and in DAZN. DAZN this weekend, by the way, giving it to you. This is where you make your $9.99 or $19.99, whatever you subscribe to. Main event, SSR, the Rat King, Srisaket Sor Rungvisai. 12 rounds rematch, Juan Francisco Estrada for SSR's WBC Junior Bantamweight title, 115, the flyweights, Rafe Superfly. Holy crap, their first fight was at the beginning of last year, and it really was the second or third best fight of the year, if we're being honest. What can we expect in this rematch?
Well, the last time we saw SSR rematch a guy, it was a lot quicker than the first time he fought him. Now, I don't think that Gallo is Chocolatito level washed like Gonzalez was when he fought SSR the second time. But SSR, he doesn't have this technique. He's not as polished a boxer as Estrada. And on some level, I really would love to see Estrada get over the hump in one of these big fights where he always comes so close and either doesn't get the decision that he could have gotten, or he just doesn't quite pull it off. He's good enough to do it. I could see him doing it, but SSR has that animal strength kind. He has that little baby Pacquiao thing going where he just seems too physical, too athletic, got the high socks. You can't mess with the high socks. And he's fueled now. He's still mad over what that tramp did to him.
Yeah.
And he's gonna take that out. He is not done taking his vengeance on the world for getting dumped. And Gaio, he's coming for you. I think that we see SSR take another win, maybe a late stoppage.
Maybe a bit of his soul. Wow. As we've established with Vlad teasing a comeback in wake of breaking up with Hayden, you know, guys are dangerous when their heart is hurt. You know, that's a wounded animal right there. So SSR is coming for all the rats, all the tails. He's ready. Here's the best thing that can happen for this division and for boxing, Rafe. That Gaio would finally have his moment. He lost a majority decision the first time around. Hell of a fight. Great style contrast. They kind of took turns owning three or four rounds at a time. It was fantastic theater. This is the same site as the first one. Give me an Estrada split decision win in a great fight that not only sets up a trilogy, but in the meantime, sets up a rematch between Estrada and Chocolatito, the one that we've wanted for a while, bro. How fired up would you be for that? Then the winner gets a trilogy with SSR.
You couldn't book it any better if you were Vince McMahon, Brian.
Yes. I'm sure Carlos Cuadras and his back knee will be watching this fight closely. All right. I'm fired up for it. Really, my prediction here, I want Estrada to get a win here, but I think you're right. SSR is just too big for this weight class, dude. He just comes, Rafe. He just brings it rock hard style. He's going to win. I don't think he stops Estrada. He's still only 29. I know that's old for a small Mexican man, but in the ring at least, but I don't know. I think I got a wider decision win in reality here for SSR. Wider decision win. All right. I don't know if you care. Co-main event, Inglewood, same card. It's a junior featherweight unification bout. A WBA and IBF coming together when Danny Roman and TJ Doheny, Rafe?
We just can expect Brian Kenny to be just laying into the pronunciation 100%. He loves him, an Irish fighter.
Do you care yet about Danny Roman? I kind of don't.
No, I don't.
All right. Well, good. That's a good
fight. I'd stop Canelo.
Yeah. Here's a fight I care about, Rafe. I didn't even know this was on this card. Oh, I'm fired up for this. I know your health is struggling right now. You're barely hanging on, but hang on for this, Rafe. Jesse Vargas versus Humberto Soto, 10 rounds junior
awesome.
Middleweights, with Soto fresh off that war with Washed Rios. Rafe, holy crap, sign me up.
Yeah, I'm with you, man. Props to Humberto Soto. That guy fights like a tough, tough gang member. And I don't know if Jesse Vargas, Vargas better catch him with something big and end it early, because he does not want to be in a war with Humberto Soto.
Not at all. Also on Friday, Rafe, DAZN will be in Italy for one of these Eddie Hearn Italian cards.
Stop
that
crap.
Cares about.
Stop that crap.
Okay, I will not even read you the main event because I know you don't care. It's Fabio Turchi against Jean-Jacques Olivier, 12 rounds cruiserweight.
You know who either of those people are?
Jean-Jacques, JJ Olivier? No, I don't. But they're cruiserweights, Rafe, okay? I know you.
Oh, I'm into that. Okay, never mind. I like that.
Okay, you do love it when we're cruising together. All right, let's close out this show here with a couple other things. Do you care about Rene Alvarado, the junior lightweight main eventing in Nicaragua? No, right?
Absolutely not, my friend.
Okay. And also we go to this. Saturday from London, ESPN Plus. This sounds like it's screaming to be one of these new MTK global cards that ESPN got into business with. Daniel Dubois versus Richard Larte, 10 rounds heavyweights. Do you care?
I will wait a few more fights to care about young Daniel Dubois.
All right, co-main event, Lerone Richards versus Tommy Langford, 12 rounds super middleweights.
Oh, I love Tommy Langford for the time that he got sent all the way to hell by the great of Tandil Kurtzidze.
Yes.
I would love to visit you in prison someday, you tiny little Georgian maniac.
Yes, thank you.
We can't handle your speed, son.
Yes. Rafe, let's close it with this here. Saturday night, Showtime, Las Vegas. Do you care about this? I was wrong the other day when I said it was a 140 fight. It's a lightweight fight. Robert Easter Jr., Rancis with Wolves, Barthelemy, 12 rounds for the vacant WBA regular lightweight title. I like this matchup a lot. It's not a main event. This is a Showtime card that's not delivering during a crowded weekend. This would be a great co-main on the West Coast or anywhere. But Robert Easter versus Rancis, I kind of like the fight, Rafe. What do you feel?
I don't need to see much more Rancis in my life. However, I'm very happy that Robert Easter is getting back in the mix. It's a talented division. There's a lot going on at 135. He's one of the better fighters in it. He only got that loss to Mikey Garcia, which was fairly competitive, even though, you know, he got beat real clear. But still, he wasn't washed in that fight. And shoot, he's good. I want more Robert Easter in my life. So this is a good start for that.
All right. I like this fight a lot. I certainly favor Easter. Rancis still kind of keeps slowly letting us down. Went up to 140, back down to 135. Just doesn't throw enough punches, ultimately, is his problem. He's Cuban beat.
He doesn't do enough to win any fights, any big fights.
He always has wild hair too, which I respect, but.
The hair I'm down with. He's got some good hair.
He's been switching ladies on Instagram lately too, but that's his personal business. I can't get behind that, Rafe. All right. Also on
2019, Brian.
Yeah, athletes do sleep with a lot of women. I really got to just let that happen. In the co-main event, Victor Postal, a guy I know you love, is back against Mohamed Mamouni. 12 rounds. It's a junior welterweight title eliminator in the WBC. Do you care?
I do care. I have a whole spiel prepared about how there's so much we still need to learn about Victor Postal, and he might actually be a really good fighter at 140, maybe even at 147, but I do not want to inflict my voice upon our listeners anymore.
Yeah.
Let's just say I care about this fight.
As Dwyer would say, don't fall in love with fighters who are what? No longer
exist.
Exist. Yeah. I don't know if that guy exists anymore. The one that stopped. The new Manny Pacquiao, I'm not sure. All right, Effie Ajagba, that great-looking PBC heavyweight, will also be on this card in the opener. 10 rounds against Michael Wallish. Rafe, maybe they're going to have to fast-track this guy into a Deontay fight.
Yo, I think it's always a good idea to start a card with some heavyweight splatter, some gore, Fangoria, and that's what FA gives you at this level.
FA is fighting like every 4 weeks now too. I love it. Also on this card, Terrell Williams against Justin Deloach, 10 rounds welterweights. Rafe, I don't know if that name rings well to you, but Terrell Williams was the guy who got that DQ win over Pritchard Cologne in the fight that unfortunately sent Cologne into a coma. And Terrell looked great in that fight, but took a long time off after it, and it messed with him mentally, knowing what happened to Pritchard. And ultimately, he came back, got a couple wins. But this was a Joe Goosen guy. Were you up on Terrell Williams? Do you care about this?
I mean, I remember that fight, and obviously the tragic outcome. I hadn't really followed what happened with Terrell Williams since. I guess I'm glad he's back in the ring, and I hope that he gets to pick up where his career left off, because that was a big upset win for him. What happened to Cologne was rough.
Yeah. Jezreel Corrales, Richard Zamora, 8 rounds lightweights on this undercard. You don't care, right?
Not really.
All right. Finally, Ray, finally, this is it. I swear I'm going to let you get off the show. Monday, Panama City, Panama.
No, I don't care about Anselmo Moreno.
Yes. Taking on Daniel Kalula, 8 rounds featherweights. Rafe, Anselmo Moreno used to be somebody. I looked him up on BoxRec. He hasn't had a good run lately, Rafe. Somehow he's actually not that old. He's only, what, 33? He was last stopped 2 years ago by Julio Seja. Stopped the fight before by Shinsuke Yamanaka. Lost to that guy earlier. Was stopped by Juan Carlos Payano. It's been a long time, Rafe, since he moved up to face Abner Maris in 2012. That was a fun fight.
That was a fun fight. However, yeah, whatever he had, it ain't there no more.
All right. Thank you, Rafe. Whatever you had is also gone as you are washed. I really hope you get better, though, from your food poisoning. Stay away from that weird stuff, Rafe. All right? Just please.
It's airline food. How was you expect it to just be slop that doesn't hurt you? I didn't know it was going to hit me this way.
Yeah, just stay away from that weird stuff. Please leave it alone, okay?
Please leave me alone.
Yes. Great show, Rafe. We went long and hard. We went rock hard mighty on this show. Special thanks to Regis Prograis. Follow this man at Rafe Boogs on Twitter. Read his books. Revisit his collaborations. Hey, follow Richard Dwyer on YouTube. He fuels this show a lot. Check out Evan Rutkowski's podcast, The Fistionados. Follow at the Alex Codinas on Twitter, our number one fan who has yet to attempt to take one of our organs, Rafe, which is really nice of him, you know? Yep. Maybe we'll hit the Irish crew on the way out here. Shout out the Gypsy Boys, right?
Okay, Gypsy Boys. Hold on, the Irish crew.
Hey,
here we go. Rise in, take a punch, just like Mike Tyson. Step in the ring, and here we go, yo. Punch up, let Mike go from Bruno.
Bruno! Bruno.
Give it to your roar like a hardcore porno. I'm Bono.
That's it. The show's over. We out. That's it. I can't do anymore. Rafe's dead. That's it. Enjoy. We out. Nah. You think I care how that guy ended that podcast? No. I don't. We out.